This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Christmas, Christmas, Christmas.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Geek and Sassy. This is Jennifer, and I'm here with Miranda.
Hi, guys.
This will be our Christmas episode.
Yes.
It is winding down, getting close to Christmas. Later in the show, we'll have a special guest, Greg Phillips, with the one part of the Hard Traveling Fanboys. And we're gonna count down our top five Christmas movies. And so stick around on the second half of the show. That will be a blast.
I'm sure it's quite comical.
Yes,
I mean, we're gonna have Greg. anytime you get a conversation with Greg, it becomes quite entertaining and colorful. You guys think I'm colorful? If you've never listened to Hard Traveling Fanboys, then you have no clue.
Yeah, it's just impressions and hilarity all around.
Yes, yes.
Before we talk about streams and reads, I wanted to mention something that was, I know we don't normally do like news type stories, but something happened this week.
This is geeky news, though.
It is geeky, and we're both women, so I feel like we have some kind of say in this. It pertains to us, I think, maybe. But back in October, the UN had designated Wonder Woman as an honorary ambassador. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember seeing all of the coverage about that. They had, I think, Gal Gadot and some artists and writers from Wonder Woman do, like, a bunch of ceremonies and things like that to honor Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And apparently, I had the news article pulled up, but now it's gone.
Were they actually did it? Because I have that one.
Yes.
I have. Yeah. They did it. What was really cool to me was they did it when Wonder Woman turned 75. Like, they made sure they did it. The official, like, honoree date was on the date of the 75th anniversary of Wonder Woman. So they tried to make it special for not just the UN, but for Wonder Woman fans. I was really excited when they did it.
I was, too. I thought it... It was perfect, actually, for something that is supposed to be a female empowerment campaign. Wonder mm-hmm. Woman just seems perfect for that honorary ambassadorship. But apparently there was a petition that got 45,000 signatures to remove her
mm-hmm.
as them.
Yes.
And I wanted to get a direct quote. The direct quote from the petition.
Oh, you're going to read it?
Yeah, awesome. I'm going to read it. Although the original creators may have intended Wonder Woman to represent a strong and independent warrior woman with a feminist message, the reality is that the character's current iteration is that of a large-breasted white woman of impossible proportions, scantily clad in a shimmery, thigh-bearing bodysuit with an American flag motif and knee-high boots, the epitome of a pinup girl. I don't usually get worked up about stuff like this, but my I've been reading Wonder Woman, and I feel like I had this connection with this character now, and that whole paragraph pissed me off. It's all they did was focus on the way she's dressed, her body type, nothing about any of her characteristics, none of her courage, none of her grace, none of her strength. And it seems in direct opposition of what they are trying to do, which is empower women.
Well, and here is where I got extremely pissy, for lack of a better word, with my, because I told you I had one major hang up and disagreement on that. The current iteration, if we really want to look at it, we should be looking at Gal Gadot, in my opinion. And her costume is not at all what they described. However, the original iteration is a strapless top that defines her cleavage with a bottom bombshell Betty blue and white stars skirt that was definitely the epitome of what a pinup would have worn. So you're telling me that you're basing all of, you made the decision to make her, and the parentheses was the honorary ambassador for the empowerment of women and girls, based off of her full 75 years. And when I went back and pulled up, just so I could make sure I was not arguing this incorrectly, the original Wonder Woman costume, it is the epitome of a what a real pin-up woman would be proud to put on her body. And by the way, why are they saying pin-up when a true pin-up is the real definition of a woman's body type?
I didn't even really think of it that way, but that makes sense to me. I think they seem to have this misconception, in my opinion, that she's over-sexualized just because of the costume. I've never felt that way. I honestly have never felt that way about Wonder Woman.
If you want to argue an over-sexualized character, and I'm probably going to piss a lot of people off, and I'm really sorry. If you wanted to argue with me and talk about, well, she's overly sexualized. We could say this all day long about different iterations of Harley Quinn. We are not. The Wonder Woman costume itself, throughout the years, has only slightly changed in variation. Yeah, so maybe one time it looked more like a baby bathing suit. Yeah, one time it's more like hot shorts. But it's not this trashy, bedroom-only worn thing. She's always had the thigh high boots. Mm-hmm. She's always had it was strapless kind of bathing suit topper. She's always had the, like, I'm woman, hear me roar arms. Like, these are not new things. These are things that have happened from day one to now in her depiction of who she is on a drawn scale or on screen scale.
But
so you chose her knowing those things.
Right. And to call her out for the way she looks or the way she's dressed is just the opposite of what you're trying to do.
Right. You're saying women. Let's empower. Right. Let's empower women.
If she was a terrible character, if she was this horrible villain and you didn't agree with her moral stance or her or whatever, that's call her out for those things. But she's above reproach. It's Wonder Woman. She's never been anything other than a shining example of a strong woman, just helpful, courageous, loving, gentle. I mean, I've seen that in this current rebirth. You know, I've been surprised by how much I have loved her in this book and by her little quiet moments of grace. And this whole thing, I don't know. I was confused, shocked by it. I think they have totally missed the whole point.
Well, and the whole point is women's empowerment. And, like, being the nerd I am, I looked up the definition of empowerment. And this right here says, and this solidifies the argument that you just started making, was empowerment refers to increasing the spiritual, political, social, or economic strength of individuals and communities. It often involves the empowered developing and the empowered developing confidences in their own capacities.
Right. And she's
we're supposed to be developing confidence. Right. Like, it's a women's empowerment group. We're teaching young women and young girls that they should be proud of what they can accomplish, proud of who they are, proud of what they look like or don't look like, or, you know, how they sound or don't sound. Or there's a thousand different things I could list, but That's exactly what one of the directions that you're going in. So I'm just completely, I'm like you, like my one main concern is that big concern. You're about empowerment. You chose to pick her, but nothing has really changed about who she was as a character.
Right. And you'd be hard pressed to find another fictional character that is iconic as her or
I agree.
Beloved as her. I feel disappointed that there was a petition to begin with, and then now that petition's going to be honored. She's no longer going to be the ambassador. I think the date was like December 16th or something like that.
Yeah, which means she never even fully made it because they weren't even going to initiate her in until October 21st.
Taking it maybe a step too far. Let's just say that, say you did take her as a sexual character. Women should be able to own that too. Women should be able to own that part of themselves and their sexuality right. as well. That should not be a deterrent, you know, because she's a sexy character if they choose to view it that way.
Because it goes with teaching people to be confident in who they are.
Exactly.
And if you are confident being a sexy female, like one of those presents herself as a sexy, if you're confident in, you know, you're not quite like that, but you're confident in yourself in general, like, that is fantastic. And that's, to me, what I get from, you know, anything I've ever read of hers.
So that's my little soapbox.
No, like, I'm glad that you were like, hey, let's talk about this.
Well, the good news is that, you know, pretty much immediately there was another petition to reinstate her. So I would urge you to, I think it's change.org is where I signed the petition. I retweeted it for sure. So find that petition to get Wonder Woman reinstated. I don't think it'll work, but maybe it will. I mean, it seems like if it only took 45,000 signatures to change their minds, you know, I feel like we could probably get that.
Let's be part of the 100,000 that tells them they're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't see them changing it, but maybe they will. So, all of that out of the way.
Yeah.
Have you been, we're bereft of, because of our CW shows being on their 6-week break.
Yeah.
Have you found anything to fill the hole in your heart?
I have, actually. I have been streaming two things because I keep forgetting I have Hulu, and I have the Hulu where you don't have to watch commercials.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it's like $2 more. I highly encourage you if you are one of those peoples. If you're one of those peoples like me that you're now spoiled to DVR and you absolutely hate commercials. Okay, and let me just say something real quick that has like minor side note. You guys know I'm really bad with these side notes. One of the reasons I really hate commercials is because if I hear one more commercial showing me what the new toy is at McDonald's that my kid just has to have that's going to break before we get home, if I hear one more commercial telling me I need to go to Credit Karma, I know what my credit is. Thank you. I take care of it. I'm not dumb. If I hear one more commercial showing me some like reality made famous by reality TV star trying to tell me to buy something, or eat this giant ass burger that is made to give you a heart attack in like two bites. Like, thank you. I've made my decisions on how I'm going to eat. I can take care of my credit. Pretty sure my kid has enough shit. And if I was going to buy your reality star crap, I would watch reality television. So I really hate commercials. Like, really. There are some that are very endearing and very touching. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you get one of those in like a stack of 20,000.
Agreed.
It's really crappy. So, if I can fast forward through the commercials, I can. So, when I found out that I can pay $2 more and have Hulu commercial free, oh, you damn skippy. I just keep forgetting I have it because, like, Jenny and I stream hardcore from Netflix, usually. But I went there because I had, last season, missed, like, pretty much half the season of Sleepy Hollow. Mm-hmm. And, season two, like, is when I've, for some reason, lost, like, half the season. And I was like, oh, I'll get to it later. Like, I really like it, but, like, I just, for some reason, you know how you have those moments mm-hmm. where it's a show you really like, but you're just not into it at the moment?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll get to it together. Yeah, so I was like, okay, I'll get to it later. So the other day was like, oh, man, Sleepy Hollow's not on Netflix. That shit's not right. And then I was, like, sliding through all my apps I have, and I went, wait a second, and I went to Hulu. So now I have been getting back to that because, yes, they're going to – Sleepy Hollow will be mid-season this year, and it's the last season. So I've been watching two. I finished two, started three, and sometimes you just got to break that monotony up. So I've been doing The Librarians as well because they just started season three of that. Mm-hmm. And it's another one that it didn't record right. So I was like, okay, I'll get to it. So, yeah, I'm doing Librarians and Sleepy Hollow are the two which Sleepy Hollow, pretty much everybody that would listen to us knows about it. I don't know if they watch it, but they know about it. The Librarians is a fantastic show on TNT, which a lot of people probably know about the Librarians movie that Noah Wiley did.
Yeah.
There was a couple of them, but they took basically those movies did well enough, and a lot of people liked them that they have a TV show that has now come about that Noah Wiley is a part of pretty heavily for the first season. The second season he's in and out, and then I gotta finish season two to tell you guys like. Whirly, is he going to be, like when season three, it just started Sunday night, so how much he's going to be in it. But they are librarians, but not in the sense of like you or I would think, but if you've seen the Librarian movie, then you know what I'm talking about. And they save mysterious artifacts, and they put them in the library to keep them safe, because the world doesn't need them. Like, they're not supposed to be out in the world. It's not safe for them to be out in the world. So they save them, and they keep watch over them and keep guard over them. And it's the antics they're going through, because the reason there are multiple librarians at the moment is because of something that's happened and things have gone off kilter, and there's never supposed to be more than one. Uh-huh. But now there's four plus Noah Wiley's character, Lynn.
So are they like magical? Is it like a magic-based thing?
There is magic that happens, but the librarians themselves are not magical. Okay. They each have special talents that are the reason why the library chose them.
Ah.
The one girl is this, like, math prodigy genius. Like, she has a tumor on her brain, and it allows her to physically see math and equation. Like, when she can look, like, say you're looking at something, and there's math to everything. She can physically, like, see the math and the equations that go with whatever is happening.
Wow.
Or whatever is going on. Like, she can see them in the air, which they keep saying it's all because of this tumor, and she won't have it removed because, like, this is like what they tell you straight off, like in the first couple episodes you meet her, but she won't have it removed because she said, well, this is who I am now, and this is fantastic, and I was already a genius, but now this is a step further in me being who I am. And that's played by Lindy Booth, and she's an amazing actress that does not get enough credit, or people don't really know about her. And then Christian Kane, who used to be part of, he was in Angel, was the thing that I really know him from. But if you look up his scorecard of things he's done, like a ton of different things. unfortunately, several times he's had long hair. So, like, a lot of people may look him up, and if you've only, if you're like me and you preferred him with short hair, only ever watched him in something with really short hair, unless you're paying really close attention to the face, you may be like, I don't know who that is. And he is like this super smart, like, has multiple, I think PhDs, master degrees, something. And, but he just looks like this Oklahoma farm boy, because he is just an Oklahoma farm boy, or at least everyone thinks. But he writes these, like, college level, like the other professors read papers that get, like, published, but he doesn't do them under his name. He has, like, a pseudonym on purpose because he doesn't want people to know. And then they have another one that the reason he was picked, his name is Ezekiel, is he's, like, this master. He can break in and out of anywhere without ever getting caught. And he's, like, super full of himself. He's like, why? I'm cute, and I'm the cutest thing you've ever seen, and I'm better than all y'all, and... And he's hysterical. He's not been in, like, a ton of things. He was in a TV series called The Neighbors that I never watched. He has, like, one credit in The Pacific, which my husband loved that HBO series, where he's just a Japanese soldier. That's John Kim. And he does a great job. And then Rebecca Romijn is actually in it as a Colonel Eve Baird, because librarians always have to have a protector. So she's like the brawn of the group.
Oh, okay.
And I kind of like that. I kind of liked that it was a woman that was picked to be like the brawn and the, you know, they're all the brain. She's not that she's dumb. She's actually very smart. And it lists like all her accomplishments. Like she was the youngest this graduate to ever, like her West Point, like you have to be a very smart person to make the military accomplishments that she, her character's given.
Okay.
And it's a fantastic show. So I hope, you know, we'll see. I don't know if season 3 is it. I had read at one point that they were going to cancel it, and then they didn't, so I guess we'll see. So go watch it, guys. Yeah, just like if you sign the petition, go watch my show so it stays on. And John Larroquette is in it, too. Oh, everybody knows John Larroquette, yeah. So.
I haven't really been watching too much. You know, several months ago, I'd started Superman the Animated Series.
I know you really wanted to watch that.
Yeah, I kind of got in this pattern of putting it on to go to sleep, and then so I would fall asleep at the same
episode I do that.
Every
yeah.
night, and so I wasn't getting anywhere with it. So I finally just put it back on and started back with that and watched several episodes the other night, determined to finish that one.
Now, tell us where that, like, where you can watch that at.
That is on Amazon Prime.
All
4, 5 seasons are on there? 4, maybe.
Okay.
I think that's the only place. I don't think it's on Netflix.
I didn't think so either. That's why I wanted to ask you, like, where it was and...
But yeah. Other than that, I just tried to catch up on some of the other things that we've talked about before. Scream Queens, which I think is about to be done.
Yeah, they have one episode next. Actually going on until the, you know, the actual... Christmas fall is really weird this year, so it actually is going to be, like, Tuesday before Christmas we'll get the... And I think it's actually the season, because they're one of those that they start and then they end mid-season, and then something else, one of the mid-season shows will take its place.
Yeah.
Very likely to be Sleepy Hollow if I look correctly.
We'll see how it ends.
Did you watch this?
Preferring season one by a wide margin.
Yes, I will agree with that.
Still, I still laugh, though. I still laugh at that show.
Well, Ryan Murphy didn't let me down.
It's the most incredible lines.
Oh, she does, but I'm telling you, I feel... I want to hug Chanel number 5.
I did too. Bless her heart.
Did you watch this week?
Yes. Like,
okay. So by the time our podcast actually airs, because if you listen to us by now, it usually airs like a week after we record. So I want to go ahead and spoil something that happened, like a mini clip. And so when they're getting their test scores.
Yeah.
For the, I forget what the name of the test is, but it's this medical test that they have to take. And the other two, they list the scores, and Chanel number 5, they're like 1 point away from perfect. Mm-hmm. And she's like, like she's about to have this heart attack. And the, you know, Chanel is like, that's because we, and so Dean Munch is like, well, she's not really Dean Munch anymore, but
that's what they call her. Yeah.
Right. And they call her that too. Dean Munch is like, okay, I want to know how you did it. And they're like, that's because we cheated. And then my favorite is Chanel number 5 goes, wait a second. You guys cheated. I didn't cheat. I score better than them. So she actually scores better than the guys that are actually doctors. Like, she's like, I'm a genius. And I kind of lost my shit because if you watch the show, guys, she is not who I would have ever picked to be that smart. But you know what? It always is the really dumb ones that are like really super book smart. Like,
not always, but I felt that.
Well, not always, but
all they do is dump on her on that show.
They do a lot.
It's just nonstop.
It's my heart because I love the girl that plays Chanel number 5. So, like, I've loved her since she was like the
Abigail Breslin.
Girl. Yeah, Abigail Breslin. Since she was getting like the little parts when she was just a tiny little girl, you know, like
freaking Signs.
I've always loved her. Yeah.
So I think that's pretty much it that I've been watching.
I know you've been reading.
Yeah, I actually have been reading more. or I call it reading when it's really listening to Audible. I did finish up to continue from last week, The Circle. So...
Okay, so can you give us, because you said when you finished it, you might be able to give an opinion.
Yeah,
so.
I will give an opinion. Okay. This is by, the author's name is Dave Eggers. I don't think I mentioned that last time. There were a lot of parts of this book that really were hitting very close to home for me because... Because the main character gets very, very caught up in the circle, the community of the tech, I call it tech company out of a lack of better definition, but where she's employed, and they expect their employees to participate socially as much as they do in work. As the book goes on, she gradually just becomes more and more immersed in that, and that it's extreme. It's the extreme social media. Like, it is a little bit disturbing listening to how she becomes involved in it. She eventually, I don't want to spoil it. I'm not going to spoil things, but she eventually becomes a worldwide. She's known worldwide because she does what they call goes transparent, which means she wears a camera and a recording device on her for most of the day, and she is broadcast all day long. So she.
Well, I don't think that spoils anything because we saw in the movie preview that you and I had told him about where she's putting it in her room, like she's sitting it in her. I haven't read the book, but I saw her setting that little camera in her room, and then it shows another one watching her from a different angle.
Things just like I said last time, I was waiting for the oh shit moment. And it took a lot of building to get there. And I would find myself getting bogged down in it. Like it felt like nothing would happen when it was just like this really slow build. And it is very immersive, listening to it. It's just a tad tedious for me. Could maybe do with some editing. But there were...
Like the book itself should be edited? Yeah, or that version of the... Audible that you listen to?
No, I just mean like the concept itself. Like, I felt like they could have gotten the point across without so much dress.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Kind of like when I was in college and high school, and I took the English as I did, my teacher would say, "Stop adding fluff."
Yes.
Basically, you didn't need the extra stuff. Like, you just could have gotten to the point quicker.
Yeah, I mean, they would add layers. Like, it was layered. Like, she had to go through what she went through, and it built on itself okay, but just a little bit too strung out there.
Gotcha.
But then there were parts and scenes that were just like poetry. Some stuff with like an aquarium and just beautifully described. That was a metaphor for what was happening to her. And the oh shit moment was a really good one. You could see it coming from a mile away, so it's not like it was sudden. So, and then the ending was not great. Because when it ended, it was very abrupt. Like, I was like checking my phone, like, wait, where's the next chapter? No, it's done. Like, okay.
When was it written? Like, is there going to be more? Is that something you know of? Like, because you just said, usually.
Good question. I could see a sequel, but I hope they can work around some
well,
of those issues.
And I have a question. I just noticed when I went to Audible, because I wanted to pull up, there are two different versions I see. One is narrated by a lady, and I don't know if the other one is a male or female, because their name's Dion.
Dion,
and
that's
very
the one
gender.
I listen to. Dion
okay,
Graham.
So that one's 13 hours, and then you're telling me the 13-hour one you listened to had drag moments, right?
Yeah.
There's one that's 16 hours.
Hmm.
And I'd be very curious to find out.
What do they
do
with the other 3 hours? I don't know.
I don't know, and they're both saying they're unabridged, and you know what unabridged is, but for somebody that, I guess, if you aren't familiar with unabridged, which I thought we were taught that in school, but, okay, so it's the Danish version. You have to actually click on it to go in further, and I was like, why did they?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, but you definitely guys have to click on it, because it doesn't tell you it's the Danish version until you get further in.
Does it take
really
longer
you
to say things in Danish?
I don't know, but also I would like to say that, I didn't think somebody named Tina would be who would narrate my Danish version.
But
and why is the Danish version $12 and the other one's $24? Never mind. Okay, off topic.
I did enjoy it, and the concept was fascinating and terrifying at the same time.
Well, when you initially told me about it, you showed me the clip of the movie that's coming out first. Mm-hmm. And then you told me the initial concept of the book itself, and it grabbed my attention and scared me. I told you that over lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And now, even with the description and your opinion, I still feel, it's one of those, like, I still feel like I have to read it.
I would definitely recommend the reading. I'm curious to see if anybody else found it as, tedious at times. Just maybe it's just because I listen to it, and maybe it's different when you read it. But I would recommend it, and I am definitely watching the movie because I think the cast is perfect.
And if it makes you feel any better, I just found out that the gentleman that wrote the book,
Dave Eggers.
Dave Eggers. He's actually also a screenwriter, and he is writing this. Like, so this is not where somebody was like, I love your idea, let me write this screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he did it himself.
Awesome.
So.
Well, maybe. We'll see what the runtime of the movie is.
I don't know. It doesn't say yet, obviously. But I think that's cool that he also is writing the movie, because a lot of times that writers will say, I want to buy the rights. For example, one of my favorite authors, Colleen Hoover, she has three of her books that are currently in production, and they let her sit in on it. They ask her opinions on things, but she did not write the screenplay to any of the movies based on her books. So I think that's kind of cool, because it feels like it would be done You know, we always complain about, is it going to be like the book, or is it going to match the book like it's supposed to? Apparently, he should screw it up.
The other thing that has gone a lot better for me is I am reading or listening to the Star Wars novel, Catalyst. And it's supposed to be a tie-in to Rogue One, which will be out by the time this podcast comes out. But right. We haven't seen yet. So this is by James Luceno and narrated by Jonathan Davis. Oh, the narration is so good. And a lot of books that I've listened to don't do sound effects, but this is a Star Wars book, and they do sound effects. They do it really well.
Kind of need to. It's really good.
They have, and it's not continuous sound effects. A lot of times it'll just be background, or if there's a battle, or I was going to say some music. Sometimes they'll do the theme.
Neil Gaiman books that way, where they actually got they call it a full production.
Right.
I know this is not a full production, but I didn't think I would like those, but I like that because of, like you said, it's Star Wars.
And it's sometimes hard to believe that this one guy is narrating all these characters because he has such a distinctive voice for all of them, and there are lots of characters.
I'd like to check it out. I did notice yesterday when I saw that you had started reading it and another one of our friends had started reading it in a book group that we're in. I went and looked it up and I noticed that it is currently on the charts for one of the best sellers, sci-fi bestsellers. And it just came out not long ago, didn't it?
Yeah, I think that it's getting a lot of really positive feedback, and I'm really enjoying it. It's the story of Galen and Lyra, the parents of the main character from Rogue One. So
okay.
she's pregnant with that character, and her name is Jyn Erso. Her mother is pregnant in the beginning of the book, and so it's basically their backstory, and it's very, very
good. That's kind of neat.
I really like it so far. I'm about halfway done trying to get through with it before I see the movie. Hopefully we'll be able to.
But the good thing is it sounds like it's one of those things if this is something that you would like to read, you could go watch the movie first, or you could read this book first based on what you're saying.
Definitely interchangeable, but I feel like I might get a lot more out of the movie if I can finish the book first.
Well, I know you and I would because we're that kind of people because we feel like we have more knowledge. Star Wars, we already have more knowledge, but Rogue One is going to be something different for all Star Wars fans. But I agree with you, but I kind of like the whole, if I'm not able to read it beforehand, do you still think I could, if somebody were to ask that? Based on the synopsis of the book I read and what I'm getting from you, it's a very much you could, you don't have to do it now.
No. And then, real quick, gotta mention my comic books. I got my stack this week, and I've only read three so far. Wonder Woman. I don't want to say too much. I don't want to spoil anything, but this is the conclusion of one of the storylines that they've been doing. Year one.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is Greg Rucka, and the art is Nicola Scott. And this is a really fantastic ending to this storyline. They're going to be starting a new one called The Truth, Part 1. There were some really great moments in this. Diana, she even gets to talk to animals in this, which I've not read of her before, which I knew that was a thing, but
I knew it was a thing, but I've also never read one where she actually talked to you.
It's so charming. And I posted tonight, I posted my page of the week, which is from this book, and it shows
everything from her lifting a tank to her sticking her tongue out at a lizard on the desert floor.
Oh, that's great.
It's beautiful. Everybody should read Wonder Woman comic books. Another amazing female, but she appeals to me on an entirely different level than Wonder Woman does, and that's Marvel's Jessica Jones.
I'd say she's on your favorites list, like Jessica Jones's character.
Yeah. She is such a smart ass in this book. I was laughing in the comic shop reading this out loud. She is just, you know, as much as I truly feel, you know, this Wonder Woman being this ideal, and then I turn around and I love Jessica Jones because she's, like, not the opposite, but she's just more grounded, I think, and more...
Right.
And I don't mean grounded, really. I wish I could explain the way I feel about her. It's her sarcasm and her fuck you attitude, honestly.
Right. She's a different style of hero, basically.
Yeah.
Really
It's not exactly anti-hero. It's just this part of me that just really... really loves her, and like I said, I don't want to, like, really, there's not really much action in this. It's a lot of dialogue, but it's so, yeah, I don't miss the action at all. It's, everything she says is amazing, but she's about to get caught up in something that I don't know if she's ready for, so I'm looking forward to see where that one goes. And then, the last one I read this week was Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 10. I still like this book. It always surprised me for some reason that it always feels like just the cosmic is the word I want to say.
That's a good word. I mean, cosmic. I'm not saying I know if it's a good word for the book because I didn't read the book, but that's a good word. Like, I like that word, cosmic.
All right, so that's me.
All right, so really the only comic I've been reading, because a lot of the ones that I either haven't picked up on mine, yeah, I've been really bad. Sorry, Mike, Dan, Phil, sorry, so sorry. But a lot of them lately that I need to get have been Cadence anyway. A lot of my stuff is kind of in limbo at the moment. But one series that Kate and I actually both read, we get the Doctor Who, and there's one for 11 and there's one for 10. And I think 12 has one. Well, we get tens. Yeah, we get tens, and it was number 16. It was a really good issue. It was just kind of fun and, you know, cause kind of had a huge Doctor Who, like, not really been happening for any of us Who fans for, like, a good while now.
No, we have the Christmas special coming.
Which back. We do, yeah, we do have that, but like, it's been like a hot minute.
Yeah,
so.
It's been like a freaking year.
So that was a lot of fun. Nothing real special like to talk about. It was just like, I finally read a comic book. I took a quick break here and I read a comic book. But really what I want to tell you guys about that I have been reading, like, I think you guys are going to get tired of me saying, Charlene Harris. You guys are going to be like, shut the hell up about Charlene Harris. But I am currently reading, I finally am doing Sookie number 2.
Okay.
But I'm reading it right now. I'm only like 4 chapters in. So far, the only confusing part is, I guess there was like, there's supposed to be this like known gap. Like, it's not one of those books that picks up immediately after 1, if you've read them. Mm-hmm. And so when I read 2, like, the first chapter, I was going, was there a novella? Did I miss something? And I didn't miss anything. I just needed to keep reading. So I felt for just a hot minute there. And I think that's the second time I've said hot minute in this podcast.
In this hot minute.
Yes. Is it going to be like? And but why? Man, I'm going to start developing like 1,000 catchphrases. But yeah, so that is still really good. I still can't say anything bad about the woman, which at first I was not a Suki fan. It just took a second go. Maybe it was one of those, like, just like we were talking about with shows, where, yes, you like it, but that's not what you want to watch right then. Mm-hmm. So you kind of take a break. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what it was when I first tried that book. It wasn't what I really wanted to be reading to begin with. So I wasn't into it.
That happens to me all the time.
I've read all of her other stuff. There's one that I keep forgetting. I have not ever read that one. It's her Lily Bard. And it's a mystery, I understand, like all the others that have been my favorites of hers first. So I will get to those too. But Suki should keep me entertained for a while. But what I'm really excited to tell you guys about is, if you listen to our interview with Barbara, during that interview when we started talking books, not just her books and her works, but books in general, if you guys remember, she told me about the Legend Saga, and book one was called Crane, because she said if I really liked Sleepy Hollow and things like then her Bitches book, then I should try Crane. And it's a 3-book series, and I don't think the 3rd book is actually out yet. But book one was the word, I'll say the words, Jenny's already heard me say these because I typed them in a book group that we're in. And yes, I know I've mentioned like 10 groups now that Jenny and I are in together, but that's how much we love each other. We really are in a bunch of groups together. And one of them is just about books, not comic books. We do have a comic book group, but this one's just like book people. And I said, fan-freaking-tastic. And normally if I'm saying that, I'm being super sarcastic. No, this book was amazing. Barbara's recommendation was so fantastic and so spot on to my likes. And she's right. You know, she told us in the first book, it's about, you know, it's focuses around the story of, you know, the Headless Horseman, Ichabod Crane, Katrina Von Tassel, or the Von Tassels in general. And this incarnation of Crane, or what is going on, the Crane that they're talking about, is a female. Huh. And I thought that was really cool. And I can't tell you more about her in general, but it does involve the Headless Horseman. And obviously, if she's Crane, you know, who is our Von Tassel this time? And it's a guy. His name's Noah.
Okay.
So the Von Tassels are in there. The Headless Horseman's in there. The Cranes are in there. The other well-known families that in the show, if you guys know, in the show Sleepy Hollow, the other like really well-known family that's from the Sleepy Hollow stories, that on the show the Von Tassel girl is supposed to be engaged to originally. I can't remember.
I was trying to remember from the Johnny Depp movie.
Yeah, because it's in there, too. Because it's part of the story. It's the other, you know, it talks about there was the Von Tassels and the Von Braun.
Yes.
The Von Brauns are there again. Like, it does a great, and it flashes back, and it goes back and forth. And it doesn't skip, like, perfectly. But, like, it'll say chapter one, Ireland. I think pretty much sure it's Ireland. Because that's her name. Her name is Ireland Crane. So it'll do like chapter one, Ireland, and it'll tell what's going on right now. And then chapter two, Ichabod. So it goes back because so as you're learning what happened then, or what they're calling the true story of Sleepy Hollow, and Ichabod is friends with Rip Van Winkle and like all a great cast of characters that you're going to be like, that wasn't in Sleepy Hollow. No, but it's all from like the same kind of like time. So it's really good. But this is the Ichabod chapters are what really happened. You know, not the story that we grew up with. And then the Ireland chapters are what is currently happening. Like the current, okay, this is happening now because it's happening again kind of thing. I can say it's happening again without it ruining anything, but it's happening again. And book two, and they end book one telling you what book two is going to be about, which obviously it's out. So, but all of a sudden, and it doesn't end the story, but it's just like a, it kind of tells you, like, it's going to go into the next one. Because it says, and then something about, and then there was a raven, and he said, nevermore. So she's still a crane. She's still a crane. She's still Ireland Crane. But now Ireland Crane is going to have to go figure out something that involves this Edgar Allan Poe story as well in book two, while dealing with what she's still dealing with when we end book one, which is per Sleepy Hollow. So I was like, what? Yes.
Who's the author?
So her name is Stacey Rourke. I'd never heard of her before. So I was really going to eventually look and see if she had done any other works. And if not, say, you just keep writing, homegirl. No, she's not actually written any others. Well, per Audible. Now, I could be wrong, guys, but right now, per Audible, it says she's only written two books. Because I was in Audible where I looked up the information for The Circle a second ago. And then book three is going to be called Steam. Let me see if, because Amazon is who will actually tell me what kind of release date we got going on. And, but obviously, Steam opens up, in my opinion, there's like all kinds of things that could be.
Yeah.
Okay, so it looks like she has written some other things, but that maybe, that it's just always been. Nothing else is on Audible.
Oh,
I'm seeing some other things on here. Other, she has apparently a romance series. It's called Real Romance Book One, Griffin series. Of course, the Legend Saga is the one that I did. That, and the covers are really cool too. To the crane and the raven. And then I just looked up the covers for Steam. So apparently, Steam is out. It's just not on Audible.
So three books so far in the Sleepy Hollow series.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called, Sleepy Hollow?
No, it's called the Legend the Saga. Legends. Because the first one is Sleepy Hollow. The second one is apparently something to do with the Raven. And I'm reading the synopsis for... I'm trying not to read too hardcore into the synopsis for three because I don't want it to ruin anything. But it looks like... The Raven, there's some stuff happening from the Raven still, and then there's some, because it says, and the Hessian will come. So there's some stuff happening that involves Sleepy Hollow still. But this cover of, it says, time passes, sins forgotten, the bodies of the victims since long rotten. So, oh, this one has to do with H.G. Wells. Now we're throwing H.G. Wells into the mix. So, one is involves all around Sleepy Hollow, which is the one I finished that made me just go, give me more. Book two is Raven, and which I have started, but I'm only like two chapters in, and it is already like, oh. I usually don't like starting books back to back like that, because then remember I was telling you guys I don't like having that like book crash when there's like no more to go on to, and I didn't want to, but I tried to read like two or three other things because I usually have an Audible book, a real book, and a Kindle book all going at the same time. Well, no, because like sometimes I can't like sit down and hold my book, so I need. I'll put in earbuds and listen, or you know, or put on speaker and listen because I'm folding clothes, washing dishes, whatever, you know that. And then when I'm going around to like, if I have doctor's visits or I have to sit in the school line or something, I don't want to take my actual book because it can be heavy and cumbersome. So I have one of those Kindles that it's not backlit or anything like that. It's just like the basic, like, here's your book. It's real thin, real small, real like, and then people can't be like, oh, or like give you the funky face if you're reading something that they think is like based on the cover they think, because I mean, don't get me wrong, Steam's cover I'm looking at right now, it looks like it could be like misconstrued as a romance novel,
like a bodice ripper.
Not a bodice ripper. Yeah. Well, one of the like newer age bodice rippers, because they don't really, you know, the old ones that like our grandmas, it was flat out like she was across his arms and stuff like that. But no, this one looks like it would be misconstrued as maybe she's reading a romance novel. No, this is actually, and it's not. I will say that. I think book the book I read, book one, and so far book two, I could see YA lovers, mystery lovers, fantasy lovers, men, women. There's some, I'm wanting to say she cusses a little in some of the descriptions of like what happens, because obviously Sleepy Hollow, there's going to be some murdering of some sort. I think the descriptions of how the murders happen, I don't know that it's necessarily any younger than a YA. Like, I would not recommend it as like a middle grade or something. And it, all the crap they put in YAs now, that's why I'm saying YA. But yeah, I cannot thank her enough for her recommendation. That was just one of the best that she could have ever possibly given for me. But I think, you know, everybody's got to give it a go.
All right. And I just wanted to say real quick, because I was flipping through Wonder Woman again. Well, and I misspoke earlier. The year one story will conclude January 11th. And then The Truth is the other storyline that will start up part one.
Oh, okay. So there, it's
I had it backwards, I think, last time. So I misspoke.
No. Like, okay. That happens. I think I'm going to be reading some more Stacey Rourke, though, because, by the way, if you have that, there's some, like, her Griffin series, it's free. It's a $0.00 on the Kindles.
That is my favorite kind of book.
So I know, right? How could you not say buy now with one click? Could you not even be in charge, guys?
Is that it? Are we done?
For this half, until we find a Gregory.
All right. Stick around. We will be, like I said, doing our top five Christmas movies with Greg Phillips.
And we each get five, guys, so it's real fun.
Oh, yeah. So stick around. We'll see ya after the break.
Come on back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Left Is from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives, of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
I don't want a lot for Christmas.
Welcome back, my little elves. We are joined by one of the illustrious hard-traveling fanboys right now to count down our top five Christmas movies. Greg Phillips,
yay!
Welcome to your Geek and Sassy debut.
Welcome, Greg!
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. Nobody can see it, but I just patted myself on the back for finally getting the opportunity to join you two ladies on the fastest rising podcast in Place to Be Nation pop history, Geek and Sassy.
So
it's my pleasure to be.
Stop it. I'm going to cry.
You totally just made that up. That's not a thing.
Yeah, I don't care if you made it up or not. I'm taking it. I'm running with it. And I'm going to tell everybody. Do you know we're the fastest rising, most downloaded? He didn't say that, but I added it.
Hey, go with it. Go with
Greg
it.
Said so.
I have always lived by the expression that always take credit for everything. Even if you didn't do it. Even if it's not true. Just take credit for it.
I like that. That seems like a valid life motto right there. I like it.
It's worked thus far. And by worked, I mean really hasn't gotten me anything. But but it's something that I find to be a motto that you can use in life if you choose to.
Well, we are super excited to have you on our show because, I mean, let's face it, there wouldn't be Geek and Sassy without the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Nope.
You guys paved the way. Gosh.
Hey, we are very, very excited with what y'all have done with your show. We're excited to see just how the whole Place to Be Nation pop feed has grown in recent months. It got a lot of great content out there, and hey, we're super stoked about it, and we are so happy that there are other people out there that share our interests. So it's great to hear all of your insights each and every week, right? Or each and every time you come out here, rather. We do ours each and every week, and it beats us into the ground, sadly, but we do it, and it's fun, and I'm glad that y'all are having fun and reaching a big audience yourselves. So awesome.
Okay, thank you. You know, we were trying to figure out what do we want to do with Greg on the show, and we knew that we would be doing this in December, and you know, we haven't done a top five in a while, so we thought,
no, that was our debut.
Top five Christmas movies seems like a no-brainer. Way harder than it sounds for me, anyway.
Not really.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, really?
Yeah. Like,
Like, after I made my list, I went online and I Google searched, like, Christmas movies A to Z. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of what they consider as Christmas movies.
Well, like, I think we might have this debate later, too, about what constitutes a Christmas movie.
There may very well be that debate. But I'm just saying, like, on this list in general, from what they are, you know, countdownuntilchristmas.com is who did it. And I'm not, like, plugging them as in, like, a, hey, go check them out. I'm plugging them because, like, I just found them, and they have this giant-ass list. It's pretty interesting, and some of them I was like, never heard of that, or that's not a Christmas movie, or okay, sure, it's a Christmas movie. So,
I had a lot of trouble.
And I will say,
my 1 through 3 were easy, but 4 and 5 were really, really hard.
Right.
Well, I would say I did like an internal debate because we may have to throw a couple as honorable mention.
Oh, for
sure.
Because,
well, I don't know if you guys are going to have them on your list, and because we all grew up at the same time. So there's two that I bet all of us want to say, but they're not our top five. But you could, it wasn't Christmas until they aired. Right. So I don't want to say them yet in case one of you guys did have it on there.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, if none of the three of us mention either one of these two, I'm going to be like, and by the way.
Okay.
And then I'll tell everybody what it's not Christmas.
And here's another question that we may come up of what constitutes a Christmas movie versus a Christmas special.
Hmm.
Oh, good point. Because that didn't have anything to do with my number one that we briefly talked about. We didn't like no one. Okay, here's the thing, guys. Nobody knows what each of us have picked yet. We did this secretly, like Jenny and I usually do mm-hmm. when we do something. And then, like, Greg did his secretly too. So we just told him, like, hey, we're doing top five Christmas movies. So he was aware.
This is the way to do a list.
Yeah. I agree. Unless you're doing something where you want to debate because you want to give that person time mm-hmm. to prep for debating.
True.
But this is a surprise. Like, I want to see what you put. And so I like that because when I told you guys my number one may cause an argument, I wasn't even thinking about constitutions between the difference between a special and a movie.
Well,
so I'm going to have to think about that.
Well, let's let our guest kick it off. Greg, what do you have as your number five?
Oh, I have been waiting to mention my number five because it may engender some disagreement, some debate, some scoffing even. But I feel that my number five selection can be summarized like so with a simple ancient phrase, a saying that dates back, some say decades, others say centuries, and that simple phrase is, if you give a man a jingle, he will jingle for one day. But if you teach a man to jingle, he will jingle all the way.
Oh, Lord.
Jingle all the way is my number five film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Listen to this all-star lineup. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sinbad, for goodness sake. And, of course, Phil Hartman, the late, great Phil Hartman. It's just a cornucopia of entertainment. And you do indeed learn that lesson that I just mentioned, that you will jingle all the way when you finish this movie, because you will learn about how to bake cookies. You will learn about the way not to talk to somebody about those cookies. And you will especially learn that Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a pervert, despite what you may read in trade magazines. So... for me, this is just a summary of everything about Christmas. I try to watch it every year. It entertains me throughout. Phil Hartman is a delight as the creepy neighbor that's hitting on Arnold's wife. Put the cookies down is a great catchphrase. I'm not the pervert. And it's got the most 90s kid ever. I will defend this to my death. No child summarizes the 90s better than Arnold's bowl cut wearing kid at the end of the movie when he says, "That's my dad. That's my dad."
That, oh my god, that is so true. I think both of my brothers looked like almost identical to that kid when that movie came out.
I love to hear that.
Yes.
That warms my heart. And this movie warms my heart every Christmas season.
I can't remember the last time
I
watched it.
It's one I considered.
Honestly.
I can't either, but when we were when I was creating my list, and believe it or not, the reason I started thinking about it is the stupid Hatchimals that are out right now.
Ugh.
And like everybody like fighting over them, and Jerry was like, "Oh, makes me think of that Arnold movie," and I was like, "Oh yeah,
it's the Turbo Man. I've got to get the Turbo Man."
Oh my god, as a parent, I know though, I'm like, I don't want the freaking, I didn't say freaking though, and I know we don't censor ourselves here at Geek and Sassy, but I don't think that's one I've busted out yet, so.
No, you leave all the F-bombs to me, I think, usually.
I don't know. I'm not sure, but yeah.
What's your number five, Miranda?
So, mine can be summed, as a mother, I'm going to use a mother phrase from that. So since he used a phrase to sum his up, my favorite one is Kevin!
Home Alone.
Yes. Like, it's not Christmas without Home Alone. And I'm sorry, I mean, you can really watch it like all year round. It's like the best movie ever. The only thing I was thinking though is, yeah, I get that he's left home alone, but you have a pretty devious kid that at home, when he's home alone, can figure the shit out that Peter, excuse me, that Kevin yeah, Peter was not very smart, that Kevin that figured out on his own, you know? I mean, I'm telling you. Like, and I was listening to it because we watched it the other day, and there's a quote he gives, like, the checkout girl. And so he's supposed to be 8. And guys, I never realized he was supposed to be that young. And I was like, dude, he's very advanced for 8, because mine's 10. And, I mean, he comes up with these plots, but he never actually does them. Like, this kid did them.
He is pretty genius.
Yeah, I'm 32 right now, and I couldn't set up most of those traps that he set up.
God, no, right?
Yeah, I would give up about halfway through. I'd be like, you know what? If they want to steal from me that bad, let's just let them.
Well, I have a gun, so I'd be like, come on, bring it. I grew up in Kentucky, and I got a gun. What you want? Come on.
I always found, like, you know, he was so elaborate with all of his setups and stuff, and they looked truly painful. None of them looked like, oh, that wouldn't really hurt. You know, especially, like, the bulbs, the glass bulbs that he puts underneath the window, and they step on them.
Army men at one point?
Yeah, I think he does.
Oh, and I'm telling you, one of those will slice your foot flat open.
Every
single
time.
Yeah, there weren't any of the classic, like, rubber ball falls on the guy's head, and it makes a doink sound, and the guy falls over. It's always, like, you know, bowling balls in the, you know, in the groinal region and
exactly.
Stuff like that. It's, you know, it's serious stuff.
That kid, like, yeah, pulled no punches whatsoever. He was going for the jugular every time.
Yep.
You know,
he knew enough about combat to know that you always attack first at the peninsula south of the equator, as they say. So he was quite advanced in the ways of combat as well.
I often wonder what happened to Kevin when he got older, you know?
Well,
did
I
he
mean,
join the military?
He clearly went
you
to
mean
prison.
Actual Kevin. I was going to say
no,
you
I don't
saw
mean,
pictures
no.
Of he's rough looking. I like how, but I like my favorite one because we watched it the other night. Like, Caden had heard about it a bunch, but he'd never actually watched it. And the other night, he was like, "Can we watch the movie where he goes?" Ah! And Jerry and I went Home Alone.
Seriously, that was the one clip that got played from that movie for like ever,
and
basically. That's
on
like
the cover too, like the original cover that we used to have. He's doing like the little thing, but the part that like killed me, he was like, "Is this toothbrush approved by the American Dental Association?"
Yeah.
I was like,
I have a weird relationship with this movie because when I was a kid, I was like an ultra goody two shoes kid, and so I would get mad at Kevin for disobeying his parents.
See, I was the kid that like helped do all the chores, so I kept going, "Oh my god, who's gonna clean this up?" Like, the problem is, now that I'm a mom, I do the same thing. Like, I watch those shows where like there's a disaster, and I'm like, "Oh shit! Like, who's cleaning that? Because I ain't." Like, and now I also, and okay, my friend brought this up the other day, and I also now need to know what the hell did his dad do that they could afford an electric bill like that while they were gone.
I've developed a theory.
And a trip to Paris at Christmas.
Exactly.
And I'd like to hear your theory. Because, I mean, really?
Okay, I as you guys know, I am, maybe you don't know, but many should know that I am somewhat of an aficionado of the action genre.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute that you mentioned this about, I saw this on Facebook that you posed this question, Miranda, about what did Kevin's dad do? It's
right.
Obvious to me what he does.
Okay.
He is actually a professional hitman. And this is actually just one of his many, many cover families that he has. He undoubtedly has families across the globe, depending on who he's been assigned to for that particular mission, that contract. And undoubtedly, after the events of Home Alone, what was it, 3, the last one they made? After the events of Home Alone 3, I have no doubt that one of his one of his associates or one of his failed hits that he didn't take out came back and killed his family as retribution, which brings him back for one last job, getting revenge for the man that killed his family.
Wow.
In some ways, Kevin's dad is the Punisher.
That's an elaborate theory. You know, I asked my husband, you know what he said?
What?
He was like, an insurance salesman, because they make a lot of damn money and they're dumbass.
That was my second poor choice. My number one choice.
And it was like,
my number two choice was insurance.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, he was like, wanting to the point. He's like, yeah, they're dumbasses, and they, you know, they got plenty of money. And I was like, okay,
sure. Allow me to pose a third option, if you will. Don't they live in the suburbs of Chicago? Isn't that where
they do? And my husband grew up in Southside Chicago, so that's maybe why he said that.
Clearly, he has mob ties. Clearly, he cooks the books for the mob.
He's
a lawyer.
He's the mob.
He's something. He's mob related. So he is, you know, connected. That's how he gets amazing trips to Paris. He's got those connections.
Maybe that's where Marv and Harry actually got the idea to go case the joints over
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Because they're like, oh, them the mob houses. You know, come on, mob, we're going to go over here because them the mob houses. We got kicked out of the mob. We too dumb. Wait, we too dumb. We got kicked out, so we got to make our living somehow.
all very valid choices, I think.
Oh, my God. Is it possible that the entire family, except for Kevin, are hitmen or hit women?
Well, definitely that oldest boy is, because he looks like pure evil.
Yeah, I could buy the oldest boy, but that girl is just the dumbest thing I've ever met. I'm sorry. But if you can't do a proper head count and there's only 17, honey, you got more fingers and toes combined than that, so you've got a problem.
That's true. If you've ever seen the movie The Good Son, though, you'll never look at Kevin the same way.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Like, oh.
Okay, so my number five, I guess since we're all, like, taking a quote out of our movies for some reason, I probably the one that most people would know from this movie is, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
And Florence!
That's from Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. Yes. I think the reason why it's number five and not higher for me is because I didn't grow up with this movie, oddly enough, for some reason. Maybe when I was younger it was in black and white and I wasn't cool with that for some reason. But I didn't get introduced to this movie until much later in life. Probably like 10 years ago. And you know, sometimes the theaters will do like Christmas movies during the day, around Christmas, and that's when I saw it first, was in the theater with my sister-in-law.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's what made me fall in love with this movie, and then since then, I've had to watch it every year. I actually do love black and white movies now, so that's part of the appeal of it. Jimmy Stewart is magic in everything that he does, so there's no way that you don't relate to George Bailey and see how much he sacrifices of his own life to give to the people of this town, Bedford Falls, and then just slowly becomes disillusioned with it and, you know, sees all of his dreams pass him up, and he just thinks that it's better off if he was never born, and then he gets to see what happens if that actually came to pass. And it's just such a beautiful story. I love it so much.
It is. It's. I mean, I will. I don't want to spoil or give anything away, but I'm going to limit my comments on this for now. But it's an amazing, amazing movie. And I'm going to tell a tale out of school, as the kids say. I was just talking to Nick Duke, my partner on the Hard Traveling Fanboys, before we recorded this podcast tonight. And did you know? And this should reveal a little bit about Mr. Duke's character. He is a Mr. Potter sympathizer.
Of course he is. This surprises me 0%.
Yep. And make no mistake. I will bring this up on the next Star Traveling podcast, and add it to the list of things that he's revealing about purchasism, pro Potterism. I don't want to live in a world where there are pro people.
Yeah,
that's Harry Potter.
I'm gonna need him to defend that, because that makes no sense.
I'm making Kelly noises. Kelly noises are happening right here.
I believe his exact comment was, well, he had some decent ideas. And I said, what?
His only decent idea was trying to get George to come work for him. He was trying to sweeten the little pot there and make George, you know, bring him into his fold because he recognizes George's brilliance. But that's the only thing that he did that was worth a damn.
Even the way he talks sounds like an evil guy. Exactly. Hello, Bailey, this is Potter. You know, like a... You came in here and called me a warped, frustrated old man. What are you but a warped, frustrated young man?
He is a supervillain, no doubt.
Oh, no, I have a supervillain on my list.
One of the best things...
You'll get there.
One of the best things anyone can do is go and find the SNL sketch of the deleted scene from It's a Wonderful Life where Dana Carvey as George Bailey is informed that it was Mr. Potter and not his uncle that took the money. And so Bailey and his friends at the end of It's a Wonderful Life go down to Potter's mansion and they confront him over it, and Potter's like, all right, I'll get you your money. And then he's like, I don't want your money, Potter. I want a piece of your ass. And they beat him down with baseball bats, and it's wonderful.
Yes. It's yes. Oh, that is a fantastic Jimmy Stewart you do, by the way.
Yes.
I love Jimmy Stewart. I have great, great admiration for the man.
Me too. All right, so what's your number four, Greg?
Oh my gosh, my number four movie is perhaps controversial because it's not higher, but it certainly belongs on the list in my opinion. Yes, it's overplayed every year, but damn it, A Christmas Story just summarizes everything that is wonderful and terrible, but ultimately wonderful about Christmas.
I am going to get in trouble from my husband that it's not on my list.
It does show up on my list.
Well, I will say, several years ago, my husband said if the pink bunny suit could be found, regardless of how old he was, he would wear it.
I feel like you could probably find one.
I almost bought the leg
lamp. I bought the leg lamp for my... Okay, so when I first got married, my father-in-law for Christmas, I was like, what would your dad like for Christmas? And at Thanksgiving, he's sitting around the table, and it's Jerry... and me, and of course little Caden and our belly, and we had my nephews and Jerry's sister and brother-in-law and Jerry's mom and dad and my grandmother, and I'm trying to decide what everybody wants for Christmas, because you know, obviously pregnant lady wants to get this Christmas crap done, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so what would you like? And his dad, like, in all seriousness, and my grandmother thought he was joking, so she starts busting out laughing, and he wasn't joking, but I was laughing too. He's like, you know what, if anybody could ever get me a leg lamp, I would be the happiest man alive. I just want a leg lamp.
It's a major award. Of course
it really is. Right.
Major award. So,
and it's fragile, which
fragile,
must
yes. This, yes. Yes. So when Caden was about 4 years old, I found a leg lamp, like a full-size leg lamp.
Wow.
And I got a really good deal on it, so I bought it. And I took the box and I did the fragile. I made it look like a crate and I wrote fragile. And then I got A Christmas Story wrapping paper and I wrapped it. And then we made him wait until everybody else had opened their gifts. And we're like, okay, now you can open yours. And Jerry told him, now when you take the paper off, you have to pay attention to the box. And he was like, okay. The old man actually was like, oh my God, I can die now. Oh my God.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
He loved it so much. Like, he was like, oh, like, because he makes us, like, he used to make us, because you know it starts, like, what, on Thanksgiving usually sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
And it airs, and then at Christmas it airs for like another 48 hours. Then,
oh, yes. Yep.
He would make us the whole time. So, like, however long it was he was at our house or at my sister in law's house, the full like 6 to 8 hours, you could not turn the TV. So, for the first 2 years of my marriage, I was like, I'm beginning to not like this movie. And it used to be my favorite.
Yeah. It definitely, those TNT marathons definitely became a staple of the. of the Phillips household. I can say that. And it's a, you know, and yeah, it does. It gets old when you watch it a thousand times over and over and over and over and over again. But I will say this, it's still awesome. Like, it's just like, what's interesting about this movie is everyone can relate to it. Even though I can honestly, I've never been through hardly any of that stuff. I've never lived in the North. So I've never been in a city where it's cold enough where you can get your tongue tucked to a pole.
Well, see, I lived in like the gateway to the South, but we get snow when it gets cold enough that could happen, and I've seen it happen. So,
and you know, I've never lived in the 1940s. I've always wanted to, but I never have.
Twenties. I'll take the 20s if we can go back.
But that being said, it's just a universal film. Like, everybody's dad, I think, is kind of like the dad in A Christmas Story. Like, for me anyway, that was my experience. Like, the dad that thinks he can fix everything himself, even when he's not qualified to fix the thing, and ends up making it worse by doing so. That was my dad growing up. So the trying to figure out how to put things together at Christmas was a staple of – in fact, one of my fondest Christmas memories was – I for some stupid reason, I got it in my head when I was 14 that I wanted an electric football game. I saw it in a catalog, a JCPenney catalog, and I thought...
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
it was my Red Ryder BB gun. I said, my God, my cousins and I were just so excited about it. I was like, we've got to get this. I have to have this. And my dad's like, you know this is not as cool as you think it is. And I was like, no, look at it. Look what it does. They're football players, and they control them and all that stuff. And he's like, all right, well, we'll get it. And they got it, and it arrived, and nobody knew how to put it together. And so you had, I'll never forget it, my dad slaving over the electric football while my uncle stood there sipping coffee and my grandfather hovered over my father as they just bickered amongst one another about how to do it properly. And about 3 hours later, they put it together and my dad said, now you better damn well play it. And my cousin and I played it for like 2 minutes and we were like, oh my God, this is horrible.
This is retarded. Yeah, right?
It was my Red Ryder BB gun breaking my glasses moment.
Oh, I think we all had one of those moments. But your like family putting that together sounds like the moment when my brothers, because one is 3 years younger than me and one is 5 years younger than me, and there was a year that they so badly wanted like this ride-on electric powered thing, but they were older. Do you remember when they came out with the ones for the kids that were a little bit bigger, like they were a little bit older? Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be like a cool thing, and I don't know why they don't have those anymore. By the way, I'd totally ride one. But
they're called cars. But anyway,
no, I don't want a car. I want like you know the meme with the Batman
golf cart.
Ride on, yeah.
I don't want a car. I want a horseless carriage.
No, that's okay. It's like the Can-Am. I was like, oh, I want one. Jerry's like, it costs more than your car. And I was like, never mind. But they wanted one really bad, kind of like your Red Ryder BB gun moment there. And it comes in like this. You have to put the stickers on. It's in like 50 pieces. And my grandpa's standing there, and he looks at my dad, and he's like, all right, son, we can do this. And the next thing I know, my grandpa's asleep on the couch, and my dad had gotten called out to go to a wreck, and my mom and I are sitting there like, all right, looks like it's down to us. So here I am at like 12, putting my brother's Christmas present together. My dad the next morning, they're like, this is awesome. And he's like, I know, right? And I just look at him like, are you kidding me right now?
Much like the long-suffering mother on A Christmas Story, she is the hero of that movie. I'm sorry.
She really is. Yeah, she holds the whole thing together because the kid is just – I mean, the kid is just lost in obsession with this one Christmas gift. And the dad is just – it seems to be on the verge of losing his mind perpetually.
Right.
and the other kid – poor kid. The other kid is cute as can be.
Oh, God, just, I love it.
Oh, yes, he is.
He's you know, he's got his own issues to deal with.
Right.
You know, so the whole family is just – the family's teetering on a razor's edge of sanity right now, and the mother is the only thing holding it together.
Right.
But it's just a beautiful, wonderful, iconic movie that summarizes the Christmas experience so beautifully and so wonderfully, and it just has so many great moments. Oh, my God. And of course, my favorite moment that also reminds me of my dad is the line – I can't remember the exact line, but the line of something around, he dealt in profanity the way that Rembrandt dealt with oils or whatever. And it's so perfect.
Well, my favorite My favorite part, it's not on my list, but since we all love this movie so much, my favorite part is rah, 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 rah. And then they chop the head off and she's like, woo! And she just loses her shit.
It's such a great
I love it. Thing. I will withhold comment for now, but yeah.
Oh, we'll go again.
Yeah, we'll go again. There's so much more you can say.
I got more to say, so...
All right, so Miranda, you're number four.
Okay, so my number four has been a black and white, and then they redid it in color. And, that's the wrong screen. Now let me go to my other screen. I almost read something from a different movie. That would have been funny.
Busted.
Get your shit together, Miranda.
I'm usually going, hashtag, get your shit together. But at this time, it didn't have to go to me.
the dreaded reflection, the dreaded I am rubber, you are glue moment we all go through.
So, my number four is Miracle on 34th Street,
mm-hmm.
which was a black and white done in, like, 1940-something. I don't really know the year. And then they did it again in 1994. And the reason 1994 version, which I'm like you, I do like black and white movies, and the black and white version is fantastic. But another, like, 90s, like, she was 90s star, you know, she was it in the 90s, was the little girl. What was her name?
I feel like her name should have been she was Matilda.
Matilda. I just can't remember.
Mara Wilson.
Okay, I wanted to say Marley, but no. Mara, and the reason I love the 1994 version is all because of the interaction between Mara Wilson and the gentleman that plays Kris Kringle. The two of them are so sweet and have such a, like, light and charm that shows up when they have their scenes together. Mara Wilson and it was Richard Attenborough.
Yep.
It looked like a relationship between a grandfather and a granddaughter that is like the perfect, even though I know he's Santa, but it was just like the perfect relationship. And it was a genuine, like, love and care and concern. I love that movie so much. And it's a heartwarming, like, not all of mine are heartwarming. And then my favorite thing from there is we invite you to ask yourself this one simple question. Do you believe in Santa Claus? And I have this whole theory about believing in Santa Claus because, you know, we're at the age, which I don't know if Ethan has done this yet, but and Caden's not yet. But we're getting the age where I know the question is going to come, like, is he real, really real? You know, my friends say he's not. And I always, when I ask this question, my mom, I thought she was a phenomenal mom with the answer she came out with. You know, boys and girls, there used to be these things called Encyclopedia Britannicas.
Way back in the Middle Ages.
Yeah, way back in the day, there was no Google. So when I started asking questions, my mom went and got our encyclopedia. And she brought it, you know, and opened it where it said Santa Claus, Kris Kringle, I think, because it was like also C, you know. And she had me read the original story about how Santa actually became. And, you know, the whole idea of there were children that couldn't get gifts. And then he was this little, you know, townsman that decided to take it upon himself. And then the love kind of carried from there and there and there. And then, of course, my family grew up, you know, very religious. So she was like, it kind of all started, you know, with Jesus. They brought him gifts and then it just kept going. And she told me, she was like, so it's one of those things that, no, there may not physically be a man walking in here with a jolly red suit. She's like, but if you look at it this way and you look at the theory and the ideal behind it, then do you believe? Is there a Santa? And my answer to her at that age, even though I knew that there's not a jolly man that's going to come down my chimney, but my answer to her was, yes, there is. And there will always be. As long as you continue to carry on the tradition and you pass it down from generation to generation, there is a Santa Claus. And he is real. And I do believe. So that's why this movie, I've always like been like, yes.
I believe.
That is a great reasoning. I know, for that.
Yeah, it is.
I got,
it
like,
really
all
is.
Happy. Like, I'm not trying to like bring us all down.
No,
like,
no. Sad,
but, like, that's my reason why I love this movie, and it's not number one because there's things, other reasons why I love others more. But it hits a certain place, and I felt like my mom was. I'm not saying anybody else's mom didn't explain it phenomenally, but my mom did. Like, just the most phenomenal job that she could have ever done. Because it was a very young age that I had it ruined for me. And she was like, you know what? I'm just going to be honest. But here it is. Read this story. Do you like to read? Do you like research? You're a smart girl. Let's do this. And I could never thank my mom enough for that. Because she instilled that in me to where I want to keep it going with my child as long as he will. That my mom still gives me Christmas presents from Santa, because I believe.
I actually love that story, and I think your mom's a genius, because I never would have thought of that.
No, my mom, your mom handled it a lot better than my mom did. I'll be honest, I took that reveal seriously when I was a kid. Like, I held that against, I felt betrayed. I actually, this is how dramatic I was when I was a kid. I literally used the word betrayed.
I could see, you were a kid a lot like me, so I could see that, like, I was, you know, reading, like, Poe at a young age and stuff, so I could see you being like, Mom. I think I told my mom I was disappointed was the word I used, but I was like 6, almost 7 when it was ruined for me.
What? That is really young.
Yeah, that's very young. I was 9. I remember it distinctly. We were riding in the car, my mom and my grandmother and I, and I was sitting there in the passenger seat, I believe, and I looked over and something that sparked the conversation. I overheard them say something or picked up on something, and I had heard my friends at school, of course, tell me that, you know, Santa Claus wasn't real, and I was like, but I always pushed it aside. I said, well, they're a bunch of morons. They're not going to get good gifts. Not believing in Santa Claus. Losers. So anyway, we were sitting there in the car, and I was finally like, wait a minute. And it clicked with me, and I was like, now, I'm going to ask you this. I pretty much had the A Few Good Men trial sequence where I was like, I want you to listen to me right now, lady. You've been telling me since I was born that there's this guy and he's Santa Claus, and that if I'm good all year, he'll bring me gifts. And he's done it, and it's been great. But now I want a direct answer from you, because I'm asking you right now. I want to know, is Santa Claus real? Is it all made up? Is it all a lie? And she did. And I remember she stuttered over herself and she didn't answer. And I was like, aha, you lied to me. You betrayed me.
Why is it when a mom like takes a few extra seconds to answer, it's like, I know. I know it.
I knew it.
You did.
I got over it like 10 minutes later. But for like 10 minutes, I was in control.
This is my great fear with my son, because he is very literal, like literal.
Yes, both of our boys are.
And so I honestly don't know how to deal with this subject. We've been very loose with like the hiding of the presents. Like if he stumbles upon them, I might explain it just to like further the conversation along, just so I don't have to like, is this going to be the year where it all falls down on me? I don't know. Like, I don't know what his reaction is going to be at all. So I've got, like, Miranda's perfect story and, like, Greg's ultimate betrayal story. And
well, I think because both of our boys are so literal, maybe if you approach it like my mom did and she laid out, like, they can read it on a piece of paper. You can lay it out in front of him and explain to him, I understand he's not a literal person, but it's an idea. It is a literal idea.
Yeah, but then, but then he will disperse this knowledge onto the youngsters of his life, which he has many younger counterparts. And
they do.
And will ruin. He cannot keep
it
a secret.
Create a domino effect.
Yeah,
Hayden's not super good at keeping a secret either. That's why I already had to give Jerry one of his Christmas presents. Which,
I said, let's go put this stuff in Dad's stocking, but don't tell him what it is. And he said, I can't do it, Mom, because I'll tell him what it is. Like, he just said, I'm out, because I can't do
it. That is so cool, though. That's so, like, honest of him.
Oh, that child's honest.
And you don't do anything in the stockings at all, because the whole idea to Caden is that Santa fills the stockings.
Well, see, that's how I thought, too, until somebody else in the house decided otherwise. But I wasn't in on that conversation.
I will tell you, another good one that my mom did, there was one year, talking about sneaking and finding presents, there was one year my brother and I got the idea that we were going to sneak, and we were going to see what they bought us. And we found all, and I mean all of our presents, because we went in their room because I don't know how you guys grew up. I mean, Caden walks in and out of our room now, and I wouldn't question it at all. Now, if I go back there and he's just back there by himself, I'm like, why are you in my room? Mm-hmm. But, like, for him to just come in and out of my room, no big deal. Like, he'll go in there and grab the iPad, or sometimes he needs to use our bathroom because somebody's visiting it in his hours, or in his. Like, I don't think about it. But when I grew up, like, it was a written, like, unwritten, understood, like, you're gonna be grounded, you don't go in mom and dad's room if they are not in there, like, and you knock on the door if they're in there, like, I don't know. But we decided we were gonna go when they weren't in there, and we found every single thing we got. And she overheard my brother and I, before our baby brother was born, giggling and telling each other, we're so excited, we got everything we asked for. Oh my god, what do you think Santa's gonna bring us in? There's nothing left to bring us. And she heard us, because we were playing together. They took every single thing back.
Oh, my God.
And got something else.
Oh, no.
Your mom is a parenting genius.
She really is. Don't tell her that, though.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. I didn't say that.
Her head. She doesn't listen to us, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she thinks we're boring. Yeah. That's right. I forgot.
Her head would grow, like, 20 sizes. And even if she decided to listen to this one podcast, yes, Mom, your ego would go, boom! But yeah, she was great. I mean, there were things that we specifically wanted that they were afraid to take back, so the grandparents got it for us. So we didn't get it, like, on Christmas morning. So here we are, we're like, oh yeah, it's gonna be a and our faces, she said, your face is all just, like, drained of color. Like,
I'm sure. Oh my gosh, she's that's like, genius.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, all I learned at a really young age, unfortunately, because we had a family member that would babysit us, and it was people talking at school, and I wanted to know. And so when I got home from school, she was on the phone with her boyfriend. And I think Jenny knows this, but I kept trying to ask her, like, if somebody hurt my feelings at school today, and they said that Santa wasn't real. And she wouldn't answer me, and I was like, please, please tell me. I need to know. And why would they say this? This is so mean. And she just turns around and looks at me and goes, because he's not!
Wow.
17, yeah, she was like 17, and I was, like I said, 6 or 7. And I just went, and my mom came home and found me crying in the bed, and that's when the whole, like, encyclopedia came out, and yeah.
And that's when she fired that babysitter.
Yeah. Well, no, she was my mom's cousin, so my mom was like, what the...
She could have saved it, though, if she had said... if she likes it, okay, so he's not real, but the Ninja Turtles are real.
Right. I babysat at 17, and I would have never, ever thought about saying that to a younger family member or any of the kids that I babysat. Ever.
Never.
She was just mean.
Ooh.
She grew up. She's better.
I feel like we're getting a lot of, like, childhood issues out during this podcast. Are y'all feeling that?
We've had betrayals, right? We've had
Greg and I were betrayed.
Bully issues, you know.
It's cathartic, I think, is the word for it. Something else that is cathartic is my number 4 movie, which I was really surprised that it was number 4, because I would think it would be higher. But you know, to quote Cousin Eddie, shitter's full.
Yes. Wow, I'm shocked this is only number 4.
I know, I really am too. I really am too.
This is another one that I was like, I'm really going to have to give it an honorable mention, because the reasons why mine are on my list have, like, deep reasons. Mm-hmm. And that is, like, a fantastic movie, and it's one of my favorite movies, but it's not in the top 5 of my favorite Christmas movies.
Seriously? I'm really surprised it did not make your top 5.
Why? Because, like I said, I have very deep reasons each one of these are. So...
Oh,
I stab at the heart of thee.
I'm sorry.
But, I mean, what can you say about Christmas Vacation? I swear to God, all year long you can quote this movie. Like, something simple, like just saying...
Never gets old.
Russ!
Never.
Just saying, ever. Russ! Loudly.
Well,
it's hilarious
also
to
notice,
me.
It's like one of the few movies in the world that no matter what genre you're a fan of or what circle you fly in, you, everyone knows this movie and loves it and can quote it.
That's the best part about it, is you can always get it like a quote train going with this movie, and it's always hilarious. But it also,
hallelujah, holy shit, where's the title?
I actually legit looked for a Jelly at the Month Club as a present for somebody this year. I, like, Googled Jelly of the Month Club, and they do exist, and they're insanely expensive. Like, I was like, Clark got a pretty good gift, because these jellies are expensive as hell. So, he should not have been complaining about not getting his bonus check. But, my favorite... Okay, so... it's so hard, but I think my favorite part of that movie is... when it's kind of not really that big of a part of the movie, but when Clark and Eddie go to, like, Walmart, and they're just, like, shopping down the aisle and having a conversation about Eddie saying that times are tough and they don't really have Christmas for the kids, and Clark's just, like, speaking with his heart. He's like, we just want to be able to, you know... give the kids a good Christmas, and as they're walking along, he's picking up these ginormous bags of dog food.
I know, that was
throwing them in the bucket. And then Clark just casually grabs like some light bulbs and puts them in there, and then Eddie just throws another bag of dog food on top of
I was gonna say,
it kills me every time.
My favorite part was, it was gonna be that part, or when he gets
so, it's so great.
And then he's like, I want to give you something too, Clark. Something real nice.
Real nice.
Oh, God, I love it.
And it's so beautiful because it's clear the whole time that Cousin Eddie is manipulating Clark into doing this.
He thinks
he is.
But
he does such a good job of playing it off.
Right,
you know? Like,
right. He's like, well, Clark, I don't know what to say. Here's a list of things that we need.
He had the list prepared the whole time.
I love that. He's like, bam! He got his great out.
It is a great, like, raising of the stake. It goes all the way back to the first Vacation movie, if you remember.
Right.
Scene in that one where they're sitting around and, you know, Clark agrees reluctantly to help, you know, loan Eddie some money. And he's like, how much do you need, Eddie? I don't need much, just a couple $100. it's just a couple $1,000. And then Clark, who had pulled out his wallet, puts his wallet back and pulls out the checkbook.
Chevy Chase's physical comedy is so subtle, but it just adds so much to the scene. Just the way he delivers these little lines, just throwaway stuff, that just kills me every time.
And just how you see from the beginning of the movie how Clark is just one of those obnoxiously happy about Christmas people. That's
right.
Just like so happy about Christmas, and he's going to bring everybody else to being as happy as he is, by hook or by crook. And by the end of the movie, he just wants to murder everyone around him.
Okay, I kind of know how he feels. I'm just going to be honest. Okay, I wasn't going to tell anybody this story because this makes me sound like really, really bad. So I was going to the mall the other day to return something. I wasn't even going to buy any Christmas presents. And they had a bunch of high school kids working doing the bell ring thing, which I had just asked like last week, like, why haven't I seen any bell ringers? I love the bell ringers. And there were two of them, these two girls, they've got to be like 16, 17. And they're in front of like the JCPenney entrance. See, there I go with making new words. Entrance. And I don't know why, but as I'm parking, I can hear them. And they're like, take the Hollywood balls at Holly. And they weren't very great either. But at first I was like, oh, that's sweet. And then somebody puts money in the bucket and they're like, Merry Christmas. And then they're like, tis the season, Toby. And they keep going. And I'm like, oh, they're for real. And then they switch to another song. And I'm like, oh my God. So I go in the mall, I return my item, I come back out, the girls at my entrance, they're like, you know that entrance in Dothan, guys, where it's down by like Belk and stuff? mm-hmm. how close it is.
Yeah.
So I go in that one because I'm like, I'm steer clear of those cray-crays. So I come back out, and the two girls are like, thank you, Merry Christmas. They hand me a little candy cane because I gave them a dollar. And you can still hear those girls down there. And by that time, they're going, jingle bells, jingle bells, and out loud. Before I even realized that I wasn't away from anyone, I said, oh, for the love of God, would somebody duct tape their fucking mouth shut.
Oh, Miranda, oh, you would have loved us in college. We went caroling one night. We actually caroled throughout the city of Troy.
When I was in Western, we got drunk and went caroling. We were great, though. Yeah, I was in show choir. We were actually decent.
We were warm. I forgot the words to all the songs. So I just like...
Batman smells.
And the best part was...
We
caroled at the house of Cliff Lusk, who will never listen to this podcast, who works with me now. But back at that day, he was just the angry old man that worked at the university, and he was just like, y'all sound like crap. It was an awesome time.
I felt so bad that I said that. And then the two girls behind me that I did give money to, though, they just started dying laughing. And they were like, we've kind of been thinking the same thing. They've been going at it for 4 hours. And I was like, I turned around and I went, oh my God, I said that out loud. And they both lost their crap.
All that Christmas cheer was driving you insane.
I usually it doesn't. I love Christmas, and I really do love Christmas, but I don't know what it was, but I was like...
You turned into Clark.
For the love... And that's why I told you guys, because you said that, like, how he starts off really happy. I've been really happy about it this whole time, and I've been, like, repping presents. I'm so excited. Every time I go in a store, there's a song on. I catch myself when I leave. I'm like, oh, I've been humming this whole time. Like, I hope I didn't sound bad. You know, or hoping that people don't think I'm weird. Oh, wait, I don't care. And then those two, and I'm like, you know, that's something that Jenny and I would do, but for some reason, they just annoyed me on a level that I couldn't handle today.
It's teenagers, yo. It's teenagers. They're annoying as shit.
I really am. I'm sorry. I can't usually handle very many of them.
Nope.
Sorry, teenagers, if you listen to this. Treat me and tell me why I should be.
But don't really. All right, so what are we on now? Greg's number three.
Greg's number three is. I'm going to bring a little bit of international flavor to the list. I'm not bringing in an international film. That would be ridiculous. What I'm doing is I'm bringing in a little place known as Nakatomi Plaza, because my number three film takes place almost entirely inside Nakatomi Plaza, the number three Christmas movie of all time, in my humble opinion. Is 1988's Die Hard.
Wow. Only
starring
three.
The
Only
great well,
number three.
And let me tell you.
Let's
why.
Go ahead and bring it out. Let's just go ahead and start cracking the knuckles. Well, it's time. I told you guys this was going to happen.
If I'm ranking these as movies, anybody that knows me knows Die Hard would be my favorite of these. I mean, there's no question. Okay, movie. As a Christmas movie, I have to rank it below my top two, because while it is a Christmas movie, I will defend that. It is certainly a Christmas movie. Christmas does not play as large a factor in Die Hard as it does in my top two films. So that's the only thing that knocked it down a little bit in my eyes as a Christmas movie. But, I mean, what is there not to love about Die Hard? And what is more in tune with the reason for the season, with the Christmas spirit, than a cop climbing up a tower and killing terrorists? To me, that is what Christmas is all about. That's what that's what we gather together to celebrate every year. That is exactly what our forefathers intended for this country to be. We gather together and we bond as one as we watch John McClane overcome the most physical obstacles in the world, walking on glass, dealing with an annoying ex-wife, doing all of this stuff, and saving people that he probably wouldn't even like if he knew him. But he does it because it's the right thing to do, and at the end of the day, he's just a normal guy trying to do what's right.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, and I'm going to help, like, solidify your reasons, right?
Yes.
Aren't most Christmas movies about the value of family and the love of family and the perfect time for them to come together, right?
Yep. Yep.
Well, that's the whole reason why McClane even came out in the first place.
Yep. Yep. He's trying to make things right, right?
Right. Right.
Okay, well, I will say, you know, McClane is the hero of the movie, but then you got Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber.
Ah, yes. The best part of the movie.
You guys are going to make me go ahead and, like, do something. I didn't want to do yet.
Well, you can defer. You can defer.
Well, the best part of the movie is, of course, when Hans Gruber affects the American accent.
Of course.
And pretends to be the American guy. And he's like, "Hello, John McClane. I am an American like you. I've traveled many kilometers to be here." And it's awesome. The movie is just...
He's got that sound that's like, "Oh, yeah, I just have something stuck in my nose."
You know? Yeah.
That's how Americans sound.
All the time. So,
I'm just going to pinch off my nose and talk to you now.
All Americans sound like this. All Americans sound like Eddie Murphy's White Like Me sketch from SNL.
Right, like he's got this fake, like, half Southern, half Texas accent where he, like...
I mean, and here's the big question. After everything that John McClane, and it's also a great lesson in life, because not everything turns out the way that you want it to. Because as we know from later films, despite everything that McClane goes through, he and Holly don't end up together, ultimately, in the end. So it's really a great object lesson in the futility of life, which is what Christmas is ultimately all about.
Wow.
Just kidding. It's also about that good fit.
Hey, and just like the story of Mary, of Joseph, you know, and Mary going and traveling to have, you know, baby Jesus, there's a pregnant woman in this story too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, these are really like digging for it shots, but I'm going, as Jenny said, I will defer if that tells you guys anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, much like our Lord and Savior's parents, John was very tired after that long trip from mm-hmm. New York, and he needed a place to unwind. Right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
okay, a group of wise men, a group of international terrorists. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey.
Perfect parallel. Yeah. Well, let's not forget the most important part of the movie, which is Reginald Ville Johnson.
Oh, of course.
Obviously.
This is the centerpiece of the 6 degrees of Reginald Ville Johnson universe. I mean, all roads in film lead through Die Hard some way. And as we've mentioned in the past, you can truly tie any actor, any character, probably any event in history in the modern era to Reginald Ville Johnson, and it's partly due to this movie.
I would agree with that completely. You have an impression, right? You have a Ville Johnson impression.
I do. Well, my Reginald Ville Johnson impression basically boils down to, "Harriet, what are you doing, Harriet?" Steve.
Oh, Steve.
Harriet, get Steve out of here before I do something I'll regret.
Okay, that was pretty good.
It was very good.
And by the way, just side note, that was a really good show. I dug that show so much.
And you know what made it a great show? It wasn't all the acting. It wasn't all the stories. It wasn't the jokes. It was the opening. When you see Ville Johnson come down the stairs.
He's like drinking a gallon of milk, and then he stops and, like, looks at the camera with his big old
smile. Or when Ville Johnson walks down the stairs. He walks down the stairs, and he does the cock his head to the side, and the...
Yeah.
You know, what hijinks have you gotten up to this time?
I think you brought this up once on, like, Facebook, maybe, because we were talking about all the shows that used to do that, where, like, they were a sitcom and they weren't supposed to, like, the camera wasn't actually there, like, it wasn't a real life thing, but, like, why did they go, like, why did they all, like, jerk to the camera and pose?
Who is shooting the footage?
When it was
the world in the universe of the show. Okay, this is way off topic, but in the universe of Family Matters, Full House, etc., who was shooting the handheld footage at the beginning of these shows?
I just don't know. We wouldn't even think to do that anymore unless we were doing it to make fun of.
No,
like,
no.
I could see a show like Portlandia or somebody else like doing that to make fun of them doing it then, you know?
Wow. They should totally do a Flash opening like that. Like, have
Oh my God, that would be hysterical. But once again, it would be Cisco, making fun of.
Cisco walk through the lab and then stop and then look at the camera and smile and tilt his head to the side. And it'll be like, whatever his name is, as Cisco, you know?
They actually, I don't think y'all watched it, but Mr. Robot did a whole episode like that in like 80s sitcom fashion.
I had heard that, but that's one of those that I haven't watched yet.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, y'all would love that. All right, Miranda's number three.
Okay, so my number three, you guys are going to be like, what? And it actually came out when Jenny, well, all of us were in high school. Yeah, all of us would have been in high school. So I don't know if you guys even know what the hell I'm talking about, but for some reason, I'm obsessed with this tiny little movie. And it was a TV movie that you can get on DVD, like, now. But it was called Olive the Other Reindeer.
Olive the Other Reindeer.
Yes, I have to confess, I've never heard of this before.
Okay, so it's a cartoon, and she's a little dog, and I was, like, obsessed with the way that it was drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, it came on, like, on a Friday night, and they made a big deal out about it. And I was like, I'm going to watch this. I don't come hell or high water. I'm going to do this. And one of my favorite things is the postman sings this song, and I can't remember the beat to it, so I'm not even going to sing it, like, for you. What am I say? He's like, by now my ligaments are toast, but here it comes, more parcel post. Why not splurge? Send it priority. That's one more pain in my posteriority.
Why do I picture I picture Foghorn Leghorn delivering that one? I think that would be a good Foghorn Leghorn line.
Oh, that would be
posteriority.
Well, and there's one part that Olive's little friend says, the laws of breaking and entering as they pertain to Santa are very unclear.
That is true, actually.
So it's like all this, like,
Let's be honest. If Santa were real in the deep south, he'd be shot dead within a few hours.
Oh, I'm pretty sure he would.
I lived in a trailer.
Like, ho, 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 so much. It's so that you can hear him. And you're like, oh, I don't need to shoot. This is Santa. Okay, we good.
He's actually saying, hold, hold, hold. No.
No. Somebody misquoted him, didn't they? That happened. Deep South Alabama, guys. That's where Santa. He was actually saying, no, as the rifle was being pointed at his
heart. Yep.
Well, or somebody was probably trying to kill their reindeer and be like, you see the antlers in that baby?
I looked up the cast of that movie while you were talking. It's fairly impressive.
Yes, it was. I had forgotten who all exactly was in it. But yes, at the time, it was like
Drew Barrymore.
Well, and there's still three people. Yeah, but yeah, it was a big deal. And Drew Barrymore was Olive,
yeah.
I believe.
Dan Castellaneta from The Simpsons.
And he's the one that sings the Postman song,
right?
I just told you guys about.
Edward Asner, Peter McNichol, mm-hmm. Hello, Tim Meadows,
Jay
Michael
Mark.
Stipe.
Hey, Jay Morgan.
Wow.
Guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty amazing cast.
That is a great cast.
I might have to watch this movie. Billy West, sold.
Told you guys. See, and at first I was like, everybody's going to be like, really? Some movie we've never, obscure movie from the 1999 that we've never heard of, that's a cartoon, by the way, guy. And I'm going to be like, you know what? F all of y'all. This is a great movie.
I will watch anything with Billy West. Anything.
I'll watch anything with Ed Asner in it.
Right?
Oh, Ed Asner's great. He's the voice of Santa in this.
He should play Granny Goodness if they ever do a live-action Justice League movie. Granny Goodness in Justice League Unlimited.
There are several people that have voiced people in different movies like that that the three of us watched that I'm always like, can we do a real one and have that person play it?
Yes. Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
But yes, this is a good little movie. You guys should watch it.
I'm definitely going to watch it. My number three is also an animated movie. Arguably the most popular, most classic, and beloved animated movie at Christmas time, Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yay! I'm so glad somebody had this on the list. Cause
what a great thing that is.
I don't even think I have to explain it. I mean, it's just so universal. Poor little Charlie Brown. My heart hurts for Charlie Brown. The poor little child.
I know,
oh my
right?
gosh.
I mean, he just had a really bad Halloween, and then here it is Christmas. I mean.
Yeah, and his little sister always kills me writing her letter to Santa. And
she's my favorite.
I love her so much. But, of course, I've always identified more with Lucy.
oh, man.
I know,
pulling
right?
the football away and everything.
Yeah. It's like my heart hurts for Charlie Brown, but then I laugh because Lucy. Because I'm a terrible human being.
See, I'm a really mean person, too, but I don't. I'm Sally.
But, see, she tries to heal the wounds that she's caused by having 5-cent therapy available for Charlie Brown.
Right.
I really wish there were for real 5-cent therapy. Kids and ladies and gentlemen out there, it is not 5 cents for therapy. No.
Well, that unless you go to David Sunday. So
David Sunday is no, I'm not kidding. Like David Sunday can like say something in a sentence and you're like, you're just standing there thinking to yourself. Many times I've been like, I have nothing to say because right now I feel like I'm going to be an idiot because he just dropped some straight up knowledge on me and I don't even know what to say right now.
David can analyze you without you realizing that he's analyzing you.
Oh, Lord.
I knew he was – no, the first time I met him, I knew that's what he was doing and I was like, I'm just going to stand here and be quiet because I don't want to say something that makes me sound stupid.
He doesn't even intentionally do it though. It's just it's like second nature to him, kind of like
for him. I think now, like now that I've known him for a while, I think it's like a natural just. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like me quoting an Austin Powers line. It just comes naturally to me. I can't help it. I don't mean to do it.
All do it. It you know it just happens.
But no, that's a. Gosh, I've already forgotten what movie we're talking about.
Here. Charlie Brown Christmas.
Charlie Brown, yeah, yeah. Okay, it's amazing, and if you don't, and I'll be honest here, I don't know how anyone can watch the end of Charlie Brown Christmas at the big speech at the end.
Yes,
if I was going to say that. Yeah, at least if you have any sort of like, you know, I guess attachment to the religious side of Christmas or anything, it's really hard not to become emotional. Like
I agree.
Watching that scene.
I agree.
It gets me every single time. And let me tell you, this would have made probably my top two or three, except in my mind, I delineated the Christmas specials from the Christmas movies. Because, like, Rudolph.
Oh, okay. So this is where this came in. This is
yeah,
the Christmas
right.
special?
See,
okay.
I looked at this and Rudolph as their own separate entities. Because, like, as, like, the Christmas specials, you know? Because, like, I love Rudolph, too. I absolutely adore it. But it's kind of like it's hard for me to count it as a movie because it's I don't know it's just a different thing for me, but I totally love that you put it on your list because I had to come up with a delineation because it was so hard for me to come up with this list in the first place because I love so many Christmas related things. But no, this Charlie Brown Christmas is awesome. Everybody should watch it. It's one of the best ever. To me, it's easily the best of the Charlie Brown specials too, in my opinion.
Yeah, for some reason, my son tends to love the Thanksgiving special for some reason.
And not a lot of people realize that there was a Thanksgiving special.
Yeah, I don't know
yeah.
that I've ever seen a Thanksgiving special.
Oh, it's actually really good.
It is really good. We got the box set that has Halloween, Christmas, Easter, and Thanksgiving in it. And yeah, for some reason, that Thanksgiving episode just really... really hit with him, but I love the Christmas one. It just doesn't get any better when Linus tells
touchy.
The story.
It's funny.
No.
Yep.
And that's what I was going to say is to touch on kind of what Greg said, I feel like almost even if you're not a very religious person or maybe even, you know, Christianity isn't your religion of choice, I feel like even what Linus says when he stands up here because he's so innocent and pure and true and he deeply believes what he's saying and what he's trying to get people to understand mm-hmm. that like I said no matter what religion you are you can't not sympathize and like kind of put your hand up like the Southern Baptist is coming out to me where you're like putting up your hand you're like shaking your head and you're like yes brother yes amen
brother,
amen,
Linus.
Brother. Yeah
oh,
like I mean like seriously, like I just feel like it's one of those moments mm-hmm. in American TV history that it doesn't matter what walk of life you come from. It's that moment where you all stop and you kind of look at your tree and you get a little misty eyed and you're like, that is Christmas.
I agree.
Like,
yeah, and it kind of makes you thankful for what you got, you know? Even if you're not, you might think, oh, I don't have much, but whatever you have, it's enough, you know?
Well, and to go on what you just said, whatever you have is enough. There's a small story I was explaining to a young woman that's in mine and Jerry's life one day. When she was complaining about the car that she had. And I said, you know, I watched a video the other day that made me kind of want to tell you something. And she's like, well, what's that? And I was like, there's probably a car sitting next to you that's about to fall apart. And they're looking over at your car that's banged up, could use some work, it's old, and going, man, I wish I had that car. And next to that guy is a man on the sidewalk riding his bike going, man, I wish I had a car, looking at the beat up one. And then there's going to be that guy that's walking down the road and has no transportation, looking at the guy on a bike going, wish I had a bicycle. And then the video that it panned out and it showed a guy in a wheelchair sitting up on a balcony, like with his arms going, man, I wish I could walk somewhere. And I cried telling her that, and that I feel that same way about what you just said about Charlie Brown, appreciating what you have and understanding that you may not have much. But what you do have, you need to, you know, like, I'm not trying to get deep in some of these things we've talked about tonight, but I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's Christmas.
Right. And even, you know, something that always struck me with that movie was after Linus has his speech, there's no dialogue. All the children, you know,
it's just quiet.
They take the little tree and they decorate it and then they sing, you know. And then Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, at the end.
And then they're doing the little, ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know, but for some reason, those kids doing that can hit me and cut me, like, deeper than.
It's the closest equivalent to me is the end of the original Grinch, when the Who's and Who. The cartoon one, when the Who's in Whoville gather around and they start singing even when all their stuff's been taken. It's the same kind of kind of feeling that it inspires, you know.
Because that we live in a different world now than when these shows originally came out. But like Miracle on 34th Street, Charlie Brown, The Grinch, the one that you said, Jenny, that it's not that I don't know it, but my brain is like availing me at the moment.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Those movies were created in a different time when it really people did appreciate what they had. And I think we need to take a step back, not us, because we get it, but I think a lot of people need to take a step back. And they're always like, oh, I can't wait for the peanut special. Well, are you getting it though?
Right.
Like sit down and get it. Because I think this is definitely a year where I could say, hey, everybody, let's take a seat and watch some of these movies that we're actually talking about here and get them.
I would agree with that completely.
Get them.
Most importantly, sit down and watch and really get the message of Die Hard.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'll be there too, but yes. Yeah.
All right. What are we on now? Greg's number two?
Oh, my gosh. My number two has already been mentioned in the panel. My number two is, of course, the latest or the greatest, in my opinion, of the sagas of the Griswold family, Christmas Vacation. I love this movie. This came so close to making my number one, guys.
Mine too.
To be honest, this is of all the movies, this didn't make my number one, but this is the movie that I rewatch more than any others. Like every year, I watch this at least once every Christmas, probably twice if I can. It's that good. It's so funny. It's so entertaining, but it's also got heart to it. As any great Christmas movie, even Die Hard has to have heart to it. And this movie is filled with heart, even amongst all the absolutely hysterical jokes, the amazing performances from Beverly D'Angelo to Randy Quaid, of course, to Chevy Chase, to Bill Murray's brother as the boss, Brian Doyle Murray,
as
Clark Griswold's crotchety old boss. just an outstanding movie. Oh my gosh, Julia Louis-Dreyfus,
yes,
and her boyfriend as the yuppie couple next door. Phenomenal. So great. Everything about this movie is awesome. I can't even pick out a favorite scene in Christmas Vacation because I honestly like almost everything about it. It's just every scene has something in it. Whether even as little a thing as the old people at the at the gathering, the old man with his toupee and the
Bethany.
Woman can't remember anything.
Yes,
that murders a cat. By
yes.
the way.
Yes.
Murders a cat to bring it to the Christmas. I mean, just
oh, that just was
phenomenal.
Great.
Just a great movie.
I do actually have an absolutely favorite part from that movie, and everybody's going to be like, how do you have a favorite part? But I do, because it goes into what we've been saying this whole time about, like, where I just went deep on you guys, and I was like, sit down, watch him, get the message. Mm-hmm. But I like when he gets stuck in the attic, mm-hmm. and he's up there, and he's like watching the whole movies, and he's crying.
With the Ray Charles song, yes.
He's crying. Because he's like, ah. And as a mom, I get that, because he's watching them, and they were little, and he's watching all these times they had together, and I kind of do that, because, you know, hormones, and I'll see, like, old pictures of Caden when he was, like, 2, and just walking, and I'll be like, and he was so little.
But it really gives you...
And then he falls through the roof.
Falls through the, yeah.
I do not fall through the roof, and I would like to remain that way, but...
It kind of gives you some context as to why Clark feels the way he does about Christmas. So, you know, I think that's a very important scene in the movie, honestly, because other than that, you're just like, why is this guy so Christmas crazy? So I really like that part.
And I think that's another point that it makes about all of us, is that for a lot of us, Christmas holds the value that it does when we're adults because of what it meant to us when we were kids.
Exactly.
Right.
Kind
of
so,
like the story of my mom explaining Santa, or for you, like, you remember these stories because it is dear to your heart, and it does have meaning, and it does.
And I think, and I think what the movie cuts to is that when you really boil it down, what is it that I loved so much about Christmas? Yeah, it was getting cool stuff, or what did Santa Claus bring me, or after that, what did my folks get me, or having stuff. But when I think back to it, my memories are not of getting stuff mm-hmm. or playing mm-hmm. with stuff. My memories are of being with my family and, you know, having everyone. It was the one time a year where everyone was together and had to be nice to each other or pretend to be nice to each other. So
and
it just brings back good memories, you know?
I agree with you, because a lot of the times, like when my cousins and I, or even tonight when we've been talking, and I think back on my Christmases and the Christmas stories I could tell you guys, like I have thousands I could tell you guys. There are only maybe 4 or 5 gifts in my lifetime, other than like recent Christmases, just because you still own them, that I can look at you and say, I remember that I got that, and here's the mm-hmm. story that went with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree
because
with that.
Because like you said, it wasn't about... I mean, yeah, we're kids, so when we were kids...
In the moment, it was about the stuff, but when you think back to
right.
it, I can't... You know, I don't remember, oh, I got this wrestling DVD. I got this video game. I think back to,
right.
I mean, I might remember it if I see it, and I jog a memory. But what I remember is us sitting around eating dinner, or us mm-hmm. sitting around watching a football game, or us out in the yard playing around, or us, you know, or like I said earlier, my dad and uncle and grandpa arguing with each other over how to set up the stupid electric football game that I wanted, you know? It's never about the stuff.
For some reason, we always had like a family talent show.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
We couldn't do that. Our family didn't have any talents.
Right.
And I'm sorry, like, I interrupted you guys there, but, like, I couldn't hear you guys for a second. And then I was like, oh, crap. Like, I totally just talked over the top of the
two. No, you're
like,
good.
I'm real sorry about that.
Oh, it was good.
So, I didn't say we had talents, Greg. I just said we had a talent show.
An untalent show. All right. Miranda, you're number 2.
I said, my number 2 is another movie from 1994. Man, these 90s, I must have really, like, dug them. Mm-hmm. And it was The Santa Claus.
I
thought that was where you were going. Yeah, number 94, yep.
And my favorite line, and I have, the reason I love number 1 is I have a story about number 2, I believe it was, because, and I would have never become a fan of, I would have never watched number 2 had I not been such a huge fan of the first one. But it was when he looks at him and he goes, well, isn't this a pretty picture? Santa rolling down the block in a Panzer. Well, kids, I certainly hope you've been good this year, because it looks like Santa just got out of the Pearson home. Incoming!
That was amazing.
That is my favorite part. Like, and I loved Tim Allen.
Like, oh, I was just about to bump in and say that Tim Allen was on top of the world back then.
Oh,
I love me some Tim Allen.
He has a show now that I don't know if anybody realizes it, but he has another sitcom now. It's a 30-minute slot on Friday night, and they've actually gone. I think this is like season 3 or 4 now, and he is just as good on it as he was, you know, with his show or any of his movies that he used to do. I mean, I know he's not as big now, but he is just as good and as outspoken and as funny as he was then. And, oh, he's great. Like, he is great. And I wore that. We had VHS, boys and girls, yes, VHS tapes. I watched this movie so much, I busted the tape. Like, the tape broke.
Wow.
And then my mom had to buy me a DVD. And she complained about, oh, my God, this DVD thing is never going to stick. $27.99 for a DVD?
It's really good. It's a really good movie.
It's a really, really good movie. And then a little quick story about number two, and I think I've told Jenny this one before. When my dad, and for me, Christmas endearing, remembering my dad this year is very important to me. So I remember number two, right after college when my parents divorced, my dad was going to be like living completely alone. So I moved back home and lived with my dad. And I remember he and I used to watch number two all the time for some reason, even when it wasn't Christmas. And one day he comes in and he looks at me and he says, there's this lady that works at the hospital and I've been thinking about asking her out, but I don't know how to do it. And I said, Dad, you just go do it. I said, I understand it's been a really long time, but all you have to do is say, would you like to go to dinner sometime or lunch or, you know, something like that. And I said, then just leave it at that. I said, and then just walk away if you have to. I said, if it's too much, because my dad is, he would mumble. Like, my dad, when he was a cop, so when he was out there, like, I mean, he could talk and you'd understand, but he was a very, like, privately kind of a soft-spoken, like, he would be sitting on one end of the couch when I was growing up, and he'd say something, and I'd be like, oh, okay, and I'd get up and I'd get him something, I'd hand it to him. And if we had anybody visiting that wasn't used to being there all the time, they'd be like, how did you know he said anything? I'm like, because he did. Did you not hear you? And they're like, no. So they used to call him Mumble Man. But so he's like, I don't know how to do this. So finally, like 3 weeks after he tells me this, he comes in and he's like, he busts my bedroom door open. He's like, I've got to tell you something. And I'm like, okay, like, what is it? And I look back on it now, and I probably shouldn't say what I said, because I was like, are you dying? Like, probably wasn't a good thing to say, but I can laugh about it now. And he goes, no, I did it. And I said, okay. Because, mind you, it's been 3 weeks. So I'm like, what the hell is my dad done flipped his shit? Like, what is going on? And he goes, I did it. I asked her if she wanted to go for noodles and pie. And I said, you didn't. Like, I immediately, because we'd watched that movie so much, I immediately knew what he did. He goes, I got there to ask her, and next thing I knew, the Santa Claus was just coming right out of my mouth. That is how he asked my stepmom on their first date. He asked her, he pulled the Tim Allen, you know, when he meets, before she's Mrs. Claus, when he meets Mrs. Claus, and asks her if she would like to go for noodles and pie.
That is a great story.
That is an amazing story.
That's my. So number one is my favorite, but number two was a decent, you know, follow up. And like I said, I would have never probably watched two had I not had such a strong love for the first Santa Claus, and that's why it falls in at number two, not number one, for a lot of other reasons, but. My number one involves my dad pretty hardcore, too. But it's definitely my number two, all because of that right there.
Well, while it's been brought up, I also want to bring a little bit of attention, just very briefly, to the fact that the Santa Claus also is great because it has an amazing title. I don't know if anyone out there has realized this, but Santa Claus is Santa Claus's name, but the Santa Claus... also refers to a clause in a legal document.
Yes,
so,
and it's written around if you guys haven't seen it, it's actually that tiny little card that Bernard gives him. Or yep. if the signs in the pants. Bernard's like, you didn't read the card? And he's like, what card? And it just says Santa Claus on it. And he's like, you didn't read the fine print? And they literally have to pull a magnifying glass out because it just looks like an embossed.
It is a rare triple layered pun, and it is.
Yeah. I wonder if I can find what it actually, I mean, we can move on, but I'm wondering if I can find what it says around there. But I mean, and this movie also had some really good like adult one-liners. Like, he hated Scott, which is, his name is Scott Calvin, and then he turns into Santa Claus. He used to crack horrible jokes about, well, not horrible, they were good, but like mean jokes about Neil, the stepfather. Because remember, he was like, the mom goes to hand him the Neil's phone number, and he's like, oh, 1-800-SPANK-ME? I know that number. Like, and he would say stuff like that all the time. I think he says something about his head being pointy or something one time, and like, he just does it all the time. Oh, it was so funny.
All right. My number two has already been mentioned, but it is A Christmas Story. I wish I knew how many times I've seen this movie, because I would watch it on TBS when it does the marathon. Like, I would just keep watching it. Like, I wouldn't even get tired of it. I just loved it that much. The little boy, Ralphie's little brother, Randy, is amazingly cute in that movie. And I didn't mention it earlier, but my favorite scene is when they're in the kitchen eating dinner, and the mom's trying to talk him into eating his food, and she has to ask him, show me how the piggies eat. And
oh my god.
And she's like, she gets her little mom voice on, and she's just like, show me how the piggies eat. And he just dives into the mashed potatoes. Yeah, he's like, I love it.
The fact that he starts laughing while it happens, it's just, yeah, it's great.
The snort and the laugh, and oh my god, it just, ugh, I cannot help but.
It's a joyful movie.
It is, that part, just because I know, like, as a mom who has a funny kid, you know, that is something that I would die laughing at. You know, if my kid did that, I would think it was the cutest thing ever. And his little laugh and his little snort, it gets me every single time. I have to stop what I'm doing. I'm like, they're coming up on my scene. I have to go watch this. Let me go watch Randy snort in his mashed potatoes for a minute. And like I said before, the mom, which it's funny because when I was younger and I would watch it, I would identify with Ralphie, of course. But as I've gotten older, the mom is just like, obviously,
yes,
the best part of the movie. And it's so funny how you can grow up with this movie. Like, you can literally grow up with this movie.
And you can, I like how you said that, though. You can grow up with this movie, and when we were younger, we would identify with one, and then we got a little bit older, maybe we identified with the other sibling, and now, for you and I, we identify with the mom. Like, for me, especially when, like, the turkey's flying off the table, and she's like, I've had those days where you just drop in the floor, and you're like,
let's get another bad thing on today. I don't know, I forgot I said that. Like, yeah,
so... So glad you mentioned that, Miranda, because I was going to bring attention to the scene where the dogs come in and they take the turkey.
The Bumpus dogs.
And it's just, in addition to it ruins all the food and everything, and the dad's been looking forward to this turkey for so long, and you just see the devastation on everyone in the family, and then the dad just steps up and he's like, get your stuff together, we're going out.
We're going out.
Like I said earlier, into my favorite scene.
And then they get the food and they all just laugh. They just,
I know.
It reminds me, like, when I was a kid, when things would go wrong at Christmas, no matter what happened, that's the one thing I will always say about my parents. No matter what happened, they always found a way to laugh at whatever situation we were in. Yeah. So
yes. It
was just, I mean, that's just a great movie and a great point, thing that movie does is remind me of the way that no matter what bad thing befalls you, there's something funny you can find in it. So,
And it had little life lessons, just like all of these. Just like, well, and I can't believe that I left that one off the list when I was talking about, like, all these other movies that teach lessons and that we should pay attention to. But that's one, too. I mean, look, they thought the entire day was going to be ruined. And ruined. Thank God, I can't. Ruined. I love my words I create. Yeah. The gone down to tarnation. But, and it didn't. And like you said, the dad was like, all right, get up, put your shoes on, get your coats, let's go. And you know, he fixed it. And I don't know.
And you know,
one of those, like, endearing things.
And he comes through. He's the one who comes through for Ralphie when everything else, you know, it seems to be all is lost. Santa has forgotten, you know.
And when he is, like Greg said, the dad that tries to fix crap and he can't, yeah, and says fragile and doesn't know what fragile is, and the mom's usually got it all together. And when she's having a bad day, he comes in and is like, let's do this.
He's, you know? he knew all along what Ralphie wanted, and he gave it to him.
Right.
You know, the mom's the hero for sure, but the dad, he knew what was up.
Well, and it's like, you know, growing up with our dads, like how they raised us, which was a different time then, you always thought they weren't paying attention, or they didn't get you, or they didn't know, and then they pulled, like, the Ralphie movie, you know, like the movie did with Ralphie, and he got it. He was there. He actually was paying attention, and, you know, he understood, and it's kind of like, man. Wow, I need to not be so mean. They are good.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, and you can't talk about this movie without saying the words Pink Nightmare or Oh Fudge.
He looks like a pink nightmare.
Fudge, yes.
Love that. Love that so much.
And I still have to find an adult-sized version.
I'm sure you can. There's got to be one. Amazon, yo.
I can't ever remember the line.
What, the adult-sized? Mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
Hmm.
I can't remember the line about the Bears. The Bears and the Packers are playing, and the mom
Okay.
Is distracting the dad.
My husband could probably tell you word for word, because my husband grew up in Chicago, ginormous Bears fan. We hate the Packers with everything we have. So I guarantee you, if he were awake and I were to turn around and be like, hey, the line from A Christmas Story about the Bears and Packers, he'd be like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's like, I can't even remember what it is, but it's just like, it's just a great, another great moment where the mom is smart enough to use the football game to distract the dad from what Ralphie's done, you know?
Right, right.
So
she's so great.
Yeah, great stuff.
All right, now we've come to Greg's number one.
I almost feel like it's anticlimactic at this point, but my number one with. It came down to a tough battle between this and Christmas Vacation, but ultimately, the movie that to me represents Christmas the best, which was my personal criteria for selecting this list, the movie that gets me in the Christmas spirit better than any other, has to be It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yes.
Not only my favorite Christmas movie, but I think one of the best movies of all time.
Yes.
Just, if the goal of art is to move you in some way or to say something about the human condition, I don't think that it's ever been done better than It's a Wonderful Life. It just, every time I watch it, every single time, and I try to watch it every year, and it's a long movie, so it's a long slog, mm-hmm. so it's hard sometimes to carve the time out, but I feel like you have to watch it in one sitting, I feel like, because it's such a, everything matters. Everything in the movie matters. Because it's ultimately making this point that we've all been in that position. I feel like, I think everybody has been in that position where you feel like you don't have anything left to give. You feel like you're just at the end of your rope. And it's cliche at this point, to the point that it's been parodied many, many times, but it never gets done as well as it was in the original, where the idea of everybody, no matter if you think that you've got nothing to give, you've made a difference in someone's life. And that's what this movie reminds me of every year, that no matter what I might be thinking, no matter what demons you may be battling at a time, no matter what problems you're having, you have made a positive difference in someone's life. And the line that gets me every time about George, you're the richest man in the whole town or whatever. Just an amazing movie. I can't recommend it highly enough to anybody. I don't see how you can watch this movie and just not feel the warmth at the end of it. Just a great, 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 great film. Awesome. My number one Christmas movie.
I think that's perfect. I agree with everything you just said. I love that movie.
I know. I'm like, man, my number one's going to sound kind of shitty now, maybe.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
I don't feel that way. I will say, if you guys, I did find the clause from A Christmas Story, if anyone did want me to give it to you.
Of course.
Yes.
So the actual clause, and believe it or not, I found the whole entire script. And then I remembered at what part it was in the movie, so that's really bad. And we're able to find it like in 2 minutes. But the Santa Claus, and he tells him, "You got the card, okay? Look." And they put it under the microscope thing, right? And it says, "In putting on this suit and entering the sleigh, the wearer waives any and all rights to any previous identity, real or implied, and fully accepts the duties and responsibilities of Santa Claus. And perpetually until such time, the wearer becomes unable to do so by either accident or design."
Wow.
So that is the full... the clause.
That is literally the Santa Claus.
Yes, literally. It is the clause. And then I typed in looking for the Bears versus Packers. And of course, it wants me to watch the thing on YouTube, but it says it's in the giant list of quotes on IMDb. So I'm like, scrolling to try to find this.
We might have to tweet that later.
We may have to tweet that later, or maybe if one of the other two of you can find it while I'm...
Tell us about your number one.
My number one, and I told you guys I might have to argue about this, but Greg has made it where I don't have to argue about this. I'm kind of bummed. But it's okay.
I can play devil's advocate.
No, I think Jenny Mike, she's going to be like, "That's okay, I get it going on the list, but number one." So it's Die Hard, guys.
Hey, that's valid.
It is a Christmas movie.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it is actually the first movie I ever remember watching with my dad, who was a through-and-through action film fan. Westerns and actions... Oh, he could watch them sun up, sun down. Probably even longer than that.
Yep.
And he loved Die Hard. And in 1988, when I was 3, when it came out, so we watched it, like, I'm talking about the first time I saw it was obviously not in theater. So this would have been probably about 89. So I'm like 3.5, 4. You have to understand, like, I thought this was the coolest shit in the world because I watched Disney Channel all damn day. So I'm like, yeah, woo, do it again. And there's my mom sitting over there going, I don't think she needs to be watching this. And I'm like doing finger guns. And I was never like that before. I was very animated even then, but I'm like. So it's like a memory with my dad. And then I remember my mom going, this is not a Christmas movie. And my dad literally pausing it. And looking at her, because this is like before they got married, and looking at her and going, I think I need to reevaluate something.
And it's totally a Christmas movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It is. I had arguments, but you guys kind of covered them. And mine is that if anybody disagreed, you always have a villain in a Christmas movie, usually. Mm-hmm. Or some protagonist of some sort. And I was going to argue deeply that Hans Gruber is the absolute greatest Christmas villain, to the point that I feel that he's greater of a Christmas villain than the Grinch himself.
Ooh, now there's a debate right there.
I can go along with that. I would throw out Snow Miser and Heat Miser as equals.
Oh, those are good. And that's an honorable mention, a cartoon right there. That is.
I missed a white Christmas. I missed a snow.
We just watched that the other night, and I was singing the opposite versions.
it's such a great song. But no, yeah, Hans Gruber is, he's just so delightfully evil.
Mm-hmm.
And not the kind of evil villain that at some point in the movie you're like, I kind of hope he wins. He's super entertaining.
No, he's like
I can't wait for John McClane to shoot you and throw you out a window.
Right. He's kind of like not as evil, and I don't hate him as much as I hate Dolores Umbridge, but he's on that level with Umbridge where you're like, I can't wait for you to go down. You know, like you're like waiting for
you
it.
You might
like,
say that
your
that
body
you
is tensing
Umbridge
and
with...
shaking, and no, I really hate Umbridge more. I really, really do. But yeah, and I mean, okay, so this movie, there's Christmas music playing like the whole time. There's like rapping, like you know, like he said, it all takes place on Christmas Eve, folks. And like you said, he was meeting his family because it was Christmas. They were gonna try to reconcile. Mm-hmm. This is a Christmas. I can't talk. Christmas movie. I'm getting excited here, folks. I can't talk. Oh my be Jesus.
and poor Carl Winslow had to work on Christmas.
Oh, bless his little heart.
I mean, and listen, Theo even goes, all right, listen up, guys. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring except the four assholes coming through the rear in the standard 2x2 cover formation. I mean, I can't do the Theo voice, but I mean...
And I think that almost, because I put it on Twitter, you know, for people to tweet us their top five, and I think almost everybody listed Die Hard in their top five.
Bam! Those my peoples. I'm telling you, I had, like, so many more arguments, because I really thought I might get, I knew I wouldn't get so much grief from Greg, but I thought Jen, and not that Jenny dislikes me, or doesn't think I make good choices, but, I mean, I thought she was going to be like, I'm going to need somebody to back this up, because I just don't see it.
Hello, it's not a monster over here.
It's an amazing choice, and I like my Christmas with lots and lots of violence.
Of course,
and if this actually is the only chance I may ever get to mention this, can I mention a pet peeve that stuck with me for let me make sure I get the years right, for 21 years now?
Yes.
Okay. Die Hard. Yes. Okay. Die Harder, the second one, right? Not quite as good as the first one, not even as the third one, but a movie that existed and certainly all right in its own way. Okay, the third one, awesome. But why was it called Die Hard with a Vengeance? Why was it not called Die Hardest?
Yeah.
Right. I've always thought that too, and maybe it was just me, but...
That's a missed opportunity right there.
It really is. It just wrote itself, and
exactly. Somebody
decided to get too cute with it, and that led to the two travesties that were Live Free and Die Hard and A Good Day to Die Hard. One of which I have a DVD case of over here. Anyway.
All right. I'm actually shocked that my number one hasn't already been mentioned. It was also popular on our Twitter with people. But my number one Christmas movie is Love Actually. It's actually one of my top five movies of all time.
And I'm kind of glad you just said that, because remember I told you guys about the giant list I found, mm-hmm. and I was scrolling, and I saw it say Love Actually, and I went, is it really, though?
Yeah, yeah.
So, not that I'm debating you, but just like many people may need me to give thousands of reasons for Die Hard, which at this point I think obviously our listeners know their crap, but I would like you to defend, like Greg and I did, Love Actually.
Okay, Love Actually is... It has everything. It has humor. It has sex. It has heart. It has loss. It has hope. It has joy. It has music. I mean, it is the perfect movie. I love stories where there are seemingly disconnected characters, but then you find out that they're connected in small ways.
I do like those few movies that are like that. Yes, I agree with you on that.
I am a sucker for those movies. So all of these characters are ancillary to each other, but they come together in a very unique way. But there are so many threads. You can identify with one of these characters at the very least. the standout moments for me are Andrew Lincoln, who is amazing in this movie. Very small part, which they're all kind of small, but he has a small part, and he steals the whole movie. Obviously, you've seen it. Greg, have you seen Love Actually?
It's been a long time, but I've seen it and really, really liked it. I am as a confession here, I am a little girl when it comes to loving Hugh Grant movies.
I think
Hugh Grant, Hugh Grant's amazing.
He is amazing.
And he's the reason I watched Love Actually, when I was in college. And I am a fan of this, and all of my dude friends from college are fans of this movie, and it's really weird to say, but we all love it. We all love watching it.
Right.
Hugh Grant's amazing. Liam Neeson, I believe, is in Love Actually also. And I would watch Liam Neeson read the phone book.
Yes.
So just a great, terrific movie. I have to confess, I've never really thought of it as a Christmas movie, but my buddy Sam absolutely views it as a Christmas movie.
Absolutely is. I mean, it's centered around Christmas.
That's true.
The whole thing is.
Absolutely. I just have never thought of it that way, but it's true. When I sit down and think about it and I consider the movie, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Okay, so what always gets me about Andrew Lincoln's character is that he's in love with his best friend's wife, and obviously he's not going to do anything about it, but he has videoed their wedding. He's an artist, and he took video of their wedding, and then she goes to his place to try to get the video, and he tries to put her off and said, maybe I lost it. And she's like, oh, is this it? It's labeled our wedding. And she puts it in, and it's just shots of her, just close-ups of her. And it has this incredible music in the background, and she's just flabbergasted. She's just blown away. She's like, but you don't like me. And he's like, the look on his face is just like, no, that's not the problem here. And when she realizes how he feels about her, he just makes some excuse and he leaves the building and he just walks around the city just cursing himself and just freaking out because she finally knows how he feels about him, and he just can't take it. He just can't handle it. And there's this amazing song in the background. It's everything to me in that movie. I love it so much. I can watch that movie and just rewind that scene over and over again because he is just devastated when he finds out that she knows his secret. And then Hugh Grant, to balance all of it out, he plays the prime minister, and he gets this amazing dance sequence, and he gets caught dancing, tries to play it off. It's so good. I mean, I could just go on and on about this movie, but it's totally always my number one Christmas movie.
Outstanding. That's a great choice, and I know some of our listeners out there will be very happy to hear the love for that one.
Oh my gosh, I could go on and on, but I won't. Okay, so let's go around and say our top fives again.
Okay,
start with Greg.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay,
Greg.
My top five were Jingle All the Way at number five. At number four, A Christmas Story. At number three, I had Die Hard. At number two, I had Christmas Vacation. And at number one, I had It's a Wonderful Life.
Miranda?
Great list. So mine is number five, Home Alone. Number four, Miracle on 34th Street, the 1994 version. Number three, Olive, the Other Reindeer. Number two, Santa Claus, obviously the first one. And number one is Die Hard.
And I had number five, It's a Wonderful Life. Number four, Christmas Vacation. Number three, A Charlie Brown Christmas. Number two, A Christmas Story. And number one, Love Actually.
Can I just say that I'm really surprised that none of us had Elf on our list?
I was thinking
Elf
that too.
Or Grinch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had Rudolph written down too, but like Greg mentioned, that was probably more of a special than a movie, but
I noticed as an adult, by the way, that noise that his stupid nose makes
oh, God.
Really annoying.
Oh, it was super
annoying. We were watching it the other night, and I was like, oh!
Which noise?
Rudolph noise.
It's like... that his nose made when it was low.
Yes.
Okay, at first I thought that you said the noise that Yukon Cornelius makes, and I will not hear any besmirching of Yukon Cornelius.
No,
Yukon Cornelius is the greatest character in any Christmas movie, in my opinion.
It's that the guy nose that awesome. Rudolph, that noise that they had his nose make, and I'm like, what the hell does his nose need to make noise? We know it lights up. Like, why does it also make noise? This goes back to our last podcast. But why?
How about the fact that the abominable snow monster can't stand on his 2 feet? He falls over constantly. I can relate.
Me too.
All right. So, since this is your debut as our guest, we had a couple of sort of rapid fire questions, as rapid fire as we all get. Anyway,
and I'm assuming these are all related to the 1992 action film Rapid Fire, starring Brandon Lee. Correct?
Of course.
That would be a good idea. Essentially, no. The genuine idea behind Jenny and Miranda's rapid fire questions is we don't give these to you ahead of time, and we ask them to you, and you essentially would give us your real answer because it would be the first thing that came to your mind, and that's why.
Okay.
Consider it rapid fire.
And I don't
have
a list.
Which, by the way, we never named it that. So I guess this is now a new segment when we have a guest. Rapid fire.
Rapid fire. We need like a cool like sound effect right there.
Rapid fire.
There you go. That is our sound effect.
All right.
Ladies and Jake.
All right. I don't have the question, so you're going to have to ask them.
It's okay. Okay. Favorite movie?
RoboCop.
Favorite book?
1984.
Favorite childhood book?
Oh, man.
It can be the same answer.
Superman, Doomsday, and Beyond.
Oh, nice. Favorite comic book character?
Nightwing, Dick Grayson.
See, everybody has a favorite, and mm-hmm. you got to put them on the spot to get it out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we ask everybody this. Favorite band or musical artist?
We give
you the or. Led Zeppelin. All right.
Oh,
and to follow, because this was a Christmas-themed show, I want to know, what is your favorite Christmas song? And then, Jenny, you get the same question.
Okay.
Oh, yes. This is easy for me. Santa Claus is Back in Town by Elvis Presley.
Oh, good.
Ooh, that's good. Huh. Mine will be All I Want for Christmas Is You, Mariah Carey.
Good. See, I have two. They've been neck and neck for a very, very long time. Mine is the Simply... Having.
Oh my God! Seriously, that is so.
Yes,
this is the ultimate Christmas debate I've discovered. It's no longer is Die
Hard.
You
either love it or you hate it.
Yes, the new Christmas debate is Paul McCartney Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time a good song or the worst song ever made?
I love it.
But my other one that's like neck and neck with it is Merry Christmas, Darling by the Carpenters.
That's way better.
Which. My mother, believe it or not, guys, she's an amazing singer, and she sounds just like
Karen Carpenter.
Karen Carpenter when she sings that song,
wow.
Like identical. And I think that's why it's my favorite Christmas song. Like,
that's
it's
a
like,
bold claim.
Oh no, she does. She does. Hmm. So yeah, that's mine. So yeah, we may have to. Maybe we'll do some Christmas songs, coming up or something.
Yeah. We probably will.
Yeah.
That's a good list, too, man. I had Elvis's Christmas album as a kid on a cassette, and I wore it out. I still play it to this day on CD form, actually, every Christmas. I wear it out. I love it.
I was going to say, another, like, all-time, like, I'd listen to it every year is Blue Christmas.
Oh yeah, that's
phenomenal.
Great, too.
So good.
Yeah.
So that just brings us to...
Oh, is it my turn?
It's your turn.
It's my turn. So, guys, our guest is going to stay again. So I'm so excited because none of us have turned us down yet. So
they wouldn't dare.
All right, ready? Nerd eye candy of the moment. Oh God, it's getting weirder.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
He's so excited. Everybody else is giving us shit for this, but I'm glad you're excited for it.
Sorry.
Hit us. What you got, Greg?
What do I got for you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, I mean, there are many options I could go with for here, but currently, at the moment, I am re-falling in love with Felicity Smoke.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
She was legitimately my favorite, not just superhero television character. She was legitimately my favorite television character for the first, three seasons of Arrow. Like, I think she was written perfectly and played perfectly by Emily Bett Rickards. Gorgeous woman, by the way. She's just delightful. And if I had my druthers, I would marry her any day now. But I don't have my druthers, or any druthers at all, for that matter. So.
Okay, Jenny's going to marry Stephen Amell, and I'm going to marry Benedict Cumberbatch, so we're all good.
It's ultimately going to mess with our Alicity plan, so if that
happens. Yeah, yeah. Like, my Alicity ship is so tight that I would just have to give it up. Like, sorry, Stephen.
But we could
be okay with it because you're married to him. So you'd be like, I know you're coming home to me, and I know you're going home to Greg. So just work it out on screen, please.
Yeah, just get all your tension out, you know. But no, it's she would have to be my top pick, my one for right now, because I went through a ways because of the way she was written, where I forgot why I loved her so much, mm-hmm. and now I'm remembering it all over again based on the last few episodes of Arrow. So. She is just delightful. She's a good follow on Twitter. She's just good. She's good.
She's great to follow on Instagram too.
Yeah, I love her on Instagram.
Unfortunately, I don't have an Instagram.
Well, we need to break you in. We are kind of one of the reasons because I kept pushing Kelly and pushing Kelly, and so did Russell and a few others. So now Kelly has a Twitter. So now we need to keep nudging the Greg until he has an Instagram.
I like that. And I like being called the Greg, too. The Greg says, it doesn't matter what your Instagram account is.
Your Instagram name is going to be the Greg.
The Greg.
Yes.
The Greg. I think you should change it.
Yes.
Well, on Twitter, too.
And yeah, and everybody will mock me at first, and then in 10 years, I'll be the biggest movie star in the world.
There you go. No, you should be like, this name change is because of Geek and Sassy.
I'll take 10%, please.
Geek and Sassy has influenced my formal name change to The Greg. I will no longer... I'm going to go into work tomorrow morning, and I'm going to say, no longer will you write checks to... Gregory Phillips. From now on, you will write your checks to the Greg. Then the beauty is, I won't have a job after that, so I won't have to worry about it.
That's like that thing where it's like they always tell me to dress for the job I want. So now I'm sitting in a discipline hearing dressed as, and there's like a bunch
Batman.
Of them, Wonder Woman, Batman. Like, yeah, it would be one of those incidents where you're sitting in a discipline hearing, or possibly even this day and age, one of those. Like, don't hurt other people's feelings.
Oh, yes, the HR seminar.
Yeah,
I am quite familiar with those. The HR
my husband loves them.
Yeah, the ones at the Dothan Eagle are the stuff of absolute legend. But, no, I will say this about jobs that you would want to have. I would love to be Oliver Queen, because then I would fight for Felicity. I could promise you that.
Yes.
Much.
Yes.
I would realize how stupid
you would give us the ship we deserve.
The ship we deserve.
That's right.
You would not fail our ship, Greg.
I would not fail our ship.
Or that city.
If it, you know what he needs? He needs Michael Caine's Alfred to give him a speech.
Well, he has Diggle. It's kind of the same.
He does.
Thing.
That's true. But
yeah.
Just imagine Diggle with a Cockney accent.
Oh.
Saying, you failed. You failed her, sir. You failed her.
With Diggle's arms.
What's the point of all those bloody salmon ladders, sir?
By the way, guys, I met my neighbor for the first time tonight. We've been meaning to meet him for a while. And he has, like, upper torso and arms of Diggle. And so the whole time he's in our house talking to us, I just keep looking at him. And I'm like...
Yeah, that would have been real awkward for me.
No, it was... It, no.
So, who's next?
You can go next, because I get kind of animated and into it. So.
Okay, so mine's kind of weird, but, you know, this is of the moment, so...
this is us!
I've been rewatching some Star Trek The Next Generation, and so I'm going to go with Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Really quiet around here.
Jean-Luc... The man never ages. Isn't that weird?
Oh, he's eternal and certainly a physical specimen, to say the
right?
least.
It's odd.
Oh, did we lose somebody?
It looks like we lost Miranda.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Let me pause. Okay, our recording cut out for a second, so Miranda didn't get to hear my nerd eye candy at the moment. So let me reiterate my nerd eye candy from my repeated viewings of Star Trek The Next Generation this week is the one, the only Jean-Luc Picard, captain of the Starship Enterprise. The man never ages.
Okay, no, I agree. I want to drink the same water he's drinking because clearly it's from the Fountain of Youth. But I have to know, is it like I'm calling him Nerd Eye Candy as in from the, like, when he was on Starship Enterprise?
Yes.
Or when, like, now? Because there's some issues that we need to discuss if you're talking about now, because then I need to reevaluate, like, all your Nerd Candy choices, because it sounds like all the rest of them were just way too young for you.
Well, I'm going to say the man still looks amazing for his age, and he's extremely talented and sexy, but specifically Star Trek The Next Generation is what I had in mind when I named him.
It's the hair.
Well, he was significantly younger, so...
Right.
It's that hair. You know what? We talked about this before. It's the uniform.
It's the power. The uniform. Yes.
Kind of like you explained to me with, I just kicked something over. I have no clue what it is. Hope I didn't break it. But I think so, because remember you were having to explain the whole, like, why the lady president was, like, really pretty?
Yeah, it's the control that he has.
It's the suit thing, the suit story.
And I mean,
yeah.
The man can wear a uniform. I'll just say that. But
And he's so authoritative when he tells Wesley to shut up. Shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley. You know, and it's so funny, because I was mentioning how stoic everybody is. I don't know if you guys watch this or are fan of Star Trek mm-hmm. Next Generation.
Oh, of course, yes.
But that first season is pretty humorless, and they're pretty stone-faced.
Oh, yeah.
Even Riker, who's usually the jokester of the group, you know, they're all just very into what's happening, and I much prefer the later seasons when they're a little bit looser, and Picard crack a smile, and much prefer him in those later seasons.
The crew went as Picard went. As Picard loosened, so did the rest of the crew.
Right.
You know? Season one, that was still clean-faced Riker, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He got more loose when he grew the beard out. And but see, Picard, you know, when Picard would crack a joke here or there, he'd be like, why don't you shut your mouth? Or something like that, you know? It would be, you know, it would just... It would inspire the entire rest of the crew of the Enterprise to let loose a little bit, except for Wesley. He remained dull, but, you know, there's no hope for some. But
leave Wesley alone.
Listen, he's great in real life, the guy that played Wesley, but Wesley was...
Will Wheaton.
A little boring.
I'm a huge fan of Will Wheaton. Until he gets on his political rants, and then I'm like, shut up, Wesley Crusher.
Will Wheaton.
Wheaton?
We're the Wesley Crushers.
The Wesley
Crushers.
You
don't get it. We're the Wesley Crushers. Like, we're going to crush Wesley.
Crusher. You know who would have been great on The Next Generation would have been Arnold. He would have been perfect on The Next Generation.
Mm.
I can just see him showing up on the bridge and saying, who is the captain here? I want to talk to him right now. Picard, we used to drink together when we were the Starfleet. What are you doing now? Look at you, girly man, with your stupid hair and your shit.
And then Wesley Crusher walk in and him be like, say something. Give me a line. What would he say if Wesley Crusher walked in?
Hey, shut up, Wesley!
Say make it so as Arnold. Say make it so.
Yes, please.
Make it so. Do it now. Come on.
Say engage.
Beam me up now. I want you to. Come on, do it.
Really? Oh, dear God.
I'm done. Sorry.
All right. Miranda.
My candy is all about ladies and
bring
gentlemen.
Us home.
Okay,
bring
so
us home.
Bringing up, and no, guys, it is not Will Wheaton, because I love you, Will Wheaton, but I don't know if he'll ever make my list. You may do something to make to make it there. But right now, you're just not making my list. But there's an epic photo that goes around of him, and my choice for this week episode, whatever you want to call it. And mine is Christian Kane.
Who's that?
Well, he is currently on The Librarians, but he was Lindsay on Angel. He was in Leverage. He
all shows I've never watched.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Really, guys?
No, I watched Angel, but I don't remember enough about Angel to remember his character in Angel. But I did watch Angel. I liked
it. Oh, he was one of the guys that he was part of, like, the group that helped Angel like all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just Googled him. I approve of this choice.
You approve of this choice? I like him short hair, though.
Ah.
You need to see. Yes, yes. I don't dig the long hair. I can't do the long hair. I just not my thing.
I like
no offense
hair.
To anybody that digs long hair. I just have never been a fan of the long hair look. But he's been on a bunch of other things. He's done voices for some video games. I'm trying to think of where either one of you would...
What's he doing
really
now?
Really know him from... Oh, he's on a show now called The Librarians, which if you guys have never watched it, it's on TNT, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Noah Wiley, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, did you ever see when Noah Wiley did The Librarians movies?
Yeah, the movies,
okay.
Yeah.
So they decided to make this show because of those movies. And Noah Wiley is... For the first season, he's in it, like, pretty hardcore. Season two, he's in and out. And then season three just started. And Christian Kane is my favorite because he is one of the librarians. Because that's the whole thing now is, why do we have... We're not supposed to have multiple librarians. Why would we have multiple librarians? This has never happened before. And he is one of them. So Christian Kane plays Jake. And he's... Like, so all of the librarians are super smart, have some sort of, like, really big talent. And he, believe it or not, he comes from, like... I want to say like a ranch or something, you know, farm. He grew up farm boy, a ranch boy. He's one of those like Oklahoma cowboys, but he has like this huge, he has like his IQ is like off the charts, and he can pretty much tell you anything about art history and architecture. And I want to say at one time they mentioned his multiple degrees, and he's written all these papers that have been published all like, that's how he makes his money, but he doesn't publish them under his name. Like, he has a pseudonym because he doesn't want anybody to know it was him. Because he's, like, that smart, but he doesn't want anybody to know. And his character is just hysterical. Because they have one guy that's, like, super funny, and he's always... One time he was like, I want somebody... He's like, okay, I want you to punch me in the face. And he goes... So Jake looks at him, and he goes, every time you talk, I want to punch you in the face. He's like, I always see, it's like, this time it's literal. And he gets, like, all excited. And I don't know, the thought, like, there was one episode he had where they had him carry, like, he had an axe slung over his shoulder, and I was like, you can cut down my trees.
Oh, Lord. On that note.
Hey, what do you mean on that note? I do this all the time. You guys are used to this. You beg for it. You come back for
more. Hey there, Nerd Eye Candy. You can butter my beans anytime.
But I will tell
some my turkey.
No, just you just no.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh!
He has some Nerd Eye Candy in there for other people too. Lindy Booth is in it.
All right.
I think I've mentioned her before.
Yeah, I think you have.
Because I think I told Russell to look her up because he likes. The redheaded chicas. He digs that redheaded thing. So he can have Lindy Booth, and I'll take Christian Kane, and he can. Yeah, we're good. I could say a few more things, but I'd probably just keep embarrassing Greg. You know.
Is that possible, though?
No, Greg and I was really hoping we'd have like a Benedict Cumberbatch moment like we had before. It was great, but probably like, I will say that's like my top. Of any panel I've ever been asked to be on or be or sit in, that was like my favorite moment ever. I will have
that was
to say
a lot
that,
of fun. We got to talk about Benedict Cumberbatch, Benedict Cumberbuns. We got to talk about you know, a great many things. And
well,
and,
but that part where you and I had like our little Cumberbatch back and forth was probably my favorite as well.
Yeah, that was like, really that was, good. That was good. That was wonderful.
I know, and you know, I've had several people go, "Did you guys plan that?" And I was like, "Actually, no." Like when we were in the sit down the night before, like we said, "Okay, we may let Miranda talk for a few minutes about it, but." We'll have to wait and see. And then I got to, and it just kind of naturally happened. So I was kind of hoping for one of those, but it's okay. You knocked me down because you wouldn't let me go any further about him trimming the bushes or the trees. Well, now on that note, because I went there, boys and girls.
Well, we've had some cathartic moments and some deep moments, and now we've talked about trimming bushes. So I think this podcast has had something for everyone.
Yes.
Well, I will say on trimming bushes, I mean real ones this time, the gift I told you guys I had to give Jerry early because Kaden wouldn't stop, I bought Jerry a chainsaw. Because he wanted to cut down some of our firewood, because we have a real fireplace. He wanted to cut it down smaller in smaller chunks. And so I got him a chainsaw as one of his Christmas presents. And Kaden kept coming around the corner going, "I'm going to use it to kill the zombies! Home defense! Woo! Got a chainsaw! Chainsaw, zombie time! Chainsaw, zombie time!" So I had to give it to Jerry, because Jerry was like, "What the hell is he talking about?"
And also, you need to lock up that chainsaw.
Yeah, I was about to say, you might
plug it in, like it's an electric one. I didn't go like crazy because there were several other gifts he got, and I got a really good deal because Harvard Freight's an awesome place. Mm-hmm. So, we actually hid it. I was trying to hide it under Kaden's bed because he has one of those doors on the end. And Kaden goes, "I don't know how I feel about going to sleep with a chainsaw under my bed." And I was like, "Kaden, it's in a box. It doesn't even have like oil or anything in it, and you have to plug it in to use it." And he goes, "Oh, that's a lot of work. I don't think anybody will try to kill me with it."
Yeah.
You can also teach him the other great uses. If you overcook a steak, you can use the chainsaw to cut the steak.
Right.
You know, if your beard grows particularly long when he gets older, he can use the chainsaw to trim it a little bit. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you to Greg for coming on the show, for finally being our guest.
Oh, my pleasure. It was a blast.
I know we ran a little long, but that's what we do.
Yeah, we apologize. We know you have to go to bed. We won't be mean to you like we were to Russell and keep calling you an old man. But
No, unless it's a Gary Oldman, and then I'll be fine with being called that.
No, we kept calling him old man because he was like, "I can't wait to get out there."
It's true in his case. I mean, he's at least a year older than me. I mean, come on. That's pretty old.
I think I'm 2 years older than you.
Well, like I said, that's not old at all.
Nice. Young. Well done. Is there anything coming up on Hard Traveling Fanboys that you want to plug?
Oh, my gosh. When is this show dropping?
Probably next week. Say the week before Christmas, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, fortuitous timing then, because by the time this goes up, people will have heard our thoughts on the new Star Wars movie, Rogue One, which was coming out and is out at the time of this broadcast. And also, people will be able to look forward to next week, the very special PTBN Pop Year in Review Comics, a giant size edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, where we will be joined by Russell Sellers, Todd Weber, and some lady named Jennifer Smith to talk about the year that was 2016 in comics. And it was a blast. We've already recorded it, folks. You're going to love it. It's a great year in review show. And then in the new year, we've got, you know, your usual weekly content coming your way. We've got a cool couple of projects I'm really excited about. We plan on reading and reviewing the lost Kevin Smith script for the Superman movie that never got made.
That's a great idea.
So we're looking forward to that, among other things. We're also working on some pretty big theme months for Wolverine, for Wonder Woman, for all the big comic book movie releases. So stay tuned to that.
Where can people find you at on Twitter?
I am at gphillips8652. That's gphillips8652. Why am I gphillips8652? Because that was the email address nomenclature, for lack of a better term. I'll just love the word nomenclature. Anyway, that was assigned to me when I was a college student, and I'm too lazy and or stupid to come up with anything else. So that's my Twitter handle. They can catch me there. Also, they can catch me on Facebook at the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. Go there. We have a lot of cool talk about comics and inside jokes.
Yeah. Also, soon to be on Instagram as The Greg, right?
Yes,
the Greg, of course.
That's going to happen, right? It better happen.
It's got to happen.
All right. So I'm Jenny Cruz, CRUZ2814, and the podcast is at Geek and Sassy.
Yes. And as always, guys, I am at Mom's a Dirt. Mom's a Dirt. Wait, that's new. I have moments where I hear my kid thinks mom's a turd. No, when I could talk correctly for just one podcast, that's
Folgers.
I did not say Folgers. I did not.
Oh my God.
Anyway, and for real, always, like for really real, on the real real, I am at Mom's a Nerd.
Soon to be Mom's a Turd.
That could be your evil alternate persona.
But anyway, thanks for listening, and thank you for being on the show, Greg.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. Right. Anytime.
Bye. Hey.
And Merry Christmas, guys.
The spirit's up, we're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The party's on, the feeling's here, that only comes this time of year. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The choir of children sing their song. We're here to